no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tons of Jets talk, tons of NHL talk for you on this Saturday morning, the 10th of July. The 2021 season has come to a conclusion. The Tampa Bay Lightning, for the second consecutive year, raise Lord Stanley's Cup. And now all the other 30, soon to be 31 teams are in an arms race to catch up to the Lightning. Dave Manuk's in my top right. Ezra Ginsberg's in my bottom middle. Gentlemen, nice to see you both. Dave sporting, if I'm not mistaken, if I can squint hard enough, a Minnesota Golden Gopher hat on this Saturday morning.
And could also be a Garden City Gopher.
Yeah, except I think there's an M being worn on the
Gopher. That's for Manuk.
That's for Manuk. Okay, it's the Manuk Golden Gopher. Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. That's,
well, today, Dave, that's Dave is the golden child, right? So it makes sense.
I'm sure that his siblings might have something to say about that, but that's a separate
issue.
Sorry,
Dan.
Altogether. Well, what about Rach?
That's true.
Yeah, there are two siblings, as you seem
sorry,
to have
Rach, as
one.
Well. Yeah.
There you go. Gentlemen, actually, good to see you.
If we were ranking your siblings, you would probably actually be third, Dave.
Gotta do
it. No, just kidding. You'd finish second. You'd be in second. Dan's third.
Yeah, Dan's third. I mean, yeah. I think there's no
Rachel's,
question.
There's no question Rachel's one.
Rachel would be
one. She has generally reigning supreme, so we'll give her that.
Yeah, but no, I think Dan is clearly third, and Dave would come in solidly in the middle there, Dave.
Yeah.
Congratulations on those very random rankings that we present to start this morning's show. It's nice to see you both. Good to see you, gentlemen. How are things? How was the week?
It's okay to see you, Drew. I wouldn't say it's great, but...
That's fine. I can accept that.
It's great to see Dave.
Okay, well, I mean, you guys, even though Dave's now, I mean, just to fill people in on what's been happening behind the scenes of Illegal Curve, there's some drama. Ezzy has dented Dave's wall and denies all responsibility. Mr. Manuk, evidence to the, can you present the evidence to the jury, please?
Well, I believe I presented it to you boys with some illustrations last week with the, some circles around the wall which Ez is claiming that he didn't do. So I don't really have proof that he did it. Yeah, it's just conjecture at this point. We'll let the forensic audit play out, and then once that's done, we'll let you know.
Well, yes, Dave, we have to let people know. Yeah, but we have to let people know. Like, I do the show at Dave's house when I'm not out at the cottage or doing the show at home. But most shows I do here, and I'm on the main floor in the dining room, and Dave is upstairs. And in this room,
there's Manuk palatial palace that it is, with both upstairs and a main floor.
Yeah, there's 8 bedrooms. There's an indoor pool. There's a moat. I mean, it's quite the compound.
Somehow you get past the moat each and every time. I'm still not sure.
Yeah, I get to do that. I use the canoe. But so there's a few dents on the wall, but I really don't think it's me, Dave, because I never have this chair behind me. I never have it, you know, that close to the wall. So if it was me, I apologize. I'll pick up some spackle and I'll fix it all up.
Yeah, I can only imagine what that would end up looking like.
I just wanted to say spackle.
I was going to say, Dave, has anybody ever sat in that chair besides Ezzy?
I was going to say, the irony of what Ez is feeling to myself, I mean, that's not true. I've had a few times of fam over, but for the most part, in fact, Ezzy was the first person I ever had dinner with at my house many, many years ago.
That's
so
very
I believe we had pasta. It is true. It was a very nice
dinner. You're actually 100% wrong. It was sushi, but that was close.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Dragon rolls. Yeah, it was good.
I guess, well, hey, Ezzy, it was memorable for me.
All righty, with that out of the way, because, you know, I don't think that, I mean, I'm sure people are here to listen to our inane banter, but I think they're more here to listen to our inane banter about hockey. So let's get started talking about the Winnipeg Jets on this Saturday morning. And the question that I pose to you guys, because we're right now, we're sort of in, it's about to get really busy. The next 3 weeks are about to get really crazy with the expansion draft, with the NHL draft, with free agency. And then 3 weeks from now, once August hits, and basically all, if there are any arbitration cases, once those all wrap up, you're just going to see it go radio silent in the NHL at that point in time. So we're really right into the heart of the silly season right now, and it's going to be busy. But the question I have for you guys, and we're going to talk about all that stuff, is, you know, as you sit here in the off season right now and you're looking ahead to next year, and next year really is only, you know, 3 months away, you know, this time in October, the 2021-2022 season is going to get underway. which one Winnipeg Jets player that's currently on the roster, in your mind, needs to provide more impact next season?
Yeah, no, so we're starting off with the hard-hitting questions here, Drew. I like it. I mean, yes. I think you could easily pick, you know, several players. And I know you sent out the show plan and you wanted to talk about this. Like, I have to put Pierre-Luc Dubois, guys, right at the top of the list. And, like, I'll explain why. And I do think that, you know, there are, you know, certain players, especially in that second round series against Montreal, where, you know, you expected more offensive output. You know, you could put most players on the Jets in that category. But, you know, for me, the way Pierre-Luc Dubois played down the stretch and in the playoffs, he left a lot to be desired. And I'm not saying that, you know, Dubois isn't a good player, because he is. You know, he's one of those, like, players that, you know, you look at and you're like, this is a physical specimen. Like I said this earlier in the season, like if you wanted to, you know, go into a lab and create like a modern day centerman, it would probably be Pierre-Luc Dubois, right? Just in terms of his physical makeup. But, you know, guys, he's got to produce more offensively, right? And yes, we have to cut him a bit of slack, guys, you know, that, you know, he had to go through the quarantine and everything like that. Like, it was a topsy-turvy season for Dubois. But when you look at the Jets up the middle and up front, like, you know what you're going to get from Mark Scheifele. You know what you're going to get from Adam Lowry. You know what you're going to get from Blake Wheeler. And a couple of weeks back, we were talking about, you know, should Wheeler be used a little bit differently next season? I do think he should be, you know, used differently. He's not the same. He just doesn't have the same, you know, offensive impact on the game, especially at even strength. But when I look up the middle, you know, if they're able to get 50 or 60 points out of Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, then they're most likely going to be a playoff team again. And yeah, there are other holes on defense. And I think the Jets are going to have to improve the fourth line, because we just don't know who's coming back, right? Like Perreault, Trevor Lewis, Nate Thompson. I mean, all three of those guys could be gone, right? Like it's possible one or two are back, but I wouldn't expect all three back. But getting back to the, you know, the segment here, I think Dubois is a big key for the Jets. Because, like I said, with Mark Scheifele at this point in his career, you know what you're going to get, guys. Like, he's a bona fide top 10 center. I mean, some people don't think that, but certainly Craig Button, when he was on the show, said, like, he thinks he might even be a top 5 center in the league. But with Pierre-Luc Dubois, he's much younger.
Offensively, no question.
Yeah, offensively. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, to your point about Scheifele, you know what you're going to get from Scheifele, and it's going to be that he's going to be a point-per-game player. I mean, he's not going to be, you know, at the McDavid level, because nobody else is, and he's not even going to usually be at the Dreisaitl level, but he's going to be, you know, a little bit over a point per game, which is, you know, certainly what you want out of it, your number one center, and that's why it qualifies him, to your point, as a top 10 offensive centerman in the game in the NHL.
Yeah, and I'll let Dave get in here as well, and like, I have to, you know, preface what I'm saying here too in by saying that I do think Dubois is going to have a bounce back year. Like, I am a guy who does think that he has a lot more to offer. But yeah, there were stretches of, you know, the regular season and, you know, those two playoff rounds against Edmonton and Montreal where you were kind of like, where is Dubois? Like, there was something that seemed just kind of off about his game. We have to mention too that he was battling an injury. So again, I'm not making excuses for him, but when you throw in, you know, the condensed season, the quarantine, switching teams, switching countries, you know, injuries, like, you know, it was almost like, you know, Dubois, just everything was stacked up against him, right? But having said that, he was brought in to be a second line center, right? Like, you lost a lot of depth at scoring on the wings when you traded Lyon and Roslovic. Like, that was there were a lot of goals between Lyon and Roslovic, obviously more so Lyon. But, you know, Roslovic was a guy who, you know, chipped in either on the second line or the third line. So Dubois got to be better offensively, but he's also going to take his entire game to the next level. If you have, you know, Scheifele, Dubois, you know, Lowry as your 1-2-3 centers, and then maybe Dave throw in a David Gustafson, I mean, the Jets center depth is going to be really solid, but, you know, Dubois got to be much better, in my opinion, next year.
Dave, is Dubois your answer? Is there anybody else that comes to mind that might be need an equally important impact on the team for next season?
No, it's squarely on Pierre-Luc Dubois. There's no question about it. And I'm with Ezzy in the regard that I'm not writing him off. I had someone say to me the other day, you know, is he a bust? And I said, I honestly don't think so. I mean, I'm not going to base it on one season. He's played, you know, three prior where he had, you know, fairly good seasons for Columbus. And, you know, you can talk about what he did in the playoffs, but, you know, to me, as I said to this individual, I'm more interested to see how good his summer is of training, how good his training camp is, and to Ezzie's point, how good he performs as a second-line center for the Winnipeg Jets, because you didn't trade him to be a winger. You traded him to give you the center depth that Ezzie just outlined with, you know, Scheifele, Dubois, Lowry, and potentially David Gustafson, who I think, you know, if he has a good summer, will get a, have a good chance of earning himself that spot. So, you know, we talk about it all the time. Center depth is critical. You can fit guys in on the wing, but it's so important to have guys who can contribute as a center. And I think Pierre-Luc Dubois was brought in to be that center. Paul Maurice has talked about how he is the center eventually for this team. Maybe, you know, in the midst of the season, they didn't get a chance to really give him that opportunity. But, you know, that to me is the player. You know, look, you when you have a blockbuster deal, when you have Patrick Laine for traded and you have a guy who can score the way Patrick Laine can score, and, you know, Patrick Laine's defense was better at the end of his tenure here in Winnipeg than it was at the beginning. And it was better than some of his line mates. And so you have a guy in Laine who was maybe not scoring as many goals as he started out as, but his overall game was coming around. You know, there's a lot of expectation and there's a lot of pressure. But the reality is, if you want, you're a top five pick in a draft and you want to get, you know, you want to be seen as a premier power forward eventually. And he's young, guys. Like, we're not saying the guy's at the, you know, apex of his career. His career is just kind of getting started. To me, remember, and he's going to be in a contract year next year. So he's going to want to be earning himself that right. So that's going to be extra motivation. But I think he's going to be motivated by the season. I think he's going to have heard, guys can say, oh, I don't listen. Everybody hears, especially when you're in a Canadian market. But everybody, they all hear this stuff. Because it's amazing how you can't hear something, you don't hear anything, but then somehow you use that as motivation in the playoffs. Nobody picked us. It's like, well, if you didn't hear anybody say anything bad about your team, how did you know that nobody picked you? It's the reality is they hear everything. They see it, they read it, or they get it sent to them. And I think, like I said, I think Pierre-Luc Dubois, if he was, you know, the fourth screen right now, would say it's on him to be a better player next year for the Winnipeg Jets. And that is going to be a critical piece. The goaltending set, you don't have to worry about the goaltending. The forwards, we know what they've got. You know, there's some potential question marks, of course. Defense, huge question mark with the defense. We'll talk about that, obviously. But from a player perspective, you asked me to isolate one specific player. There's nobody that I can see in that way more than Pierre-Luc Dubois.
To your point, to both of your points, does that mean it is sort of priority number one from the coaching staff perspective, sort of find, you know, making sure that they deploy Pierre-Luc Dubois in a circumstances where he's comfortable and he gets line mates that he's comfortable with? You know, is that sort of something that you'd be, I know we're sort of skipping ahead of ourselves here, but when training camp begins, and that training camp is, you know, a couple months from now only, you know, is that priority number one for Paul Maurice? He's obviously still going to be the Jets head coach. Is finding Pierre-Luc Dubois line mates that he can grow with and that he can develop with? Because I think part of the Dubois problem this past year was that sometimes he was a centerman, sometimes he was a winger. He never really seemed comfortable or steady in a role that he could learn to play to the peak of his ability. Would that be something that you think is really incumbent on Maurice and the coaching staff to figure out between now and the start of next year?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to find the right mix. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what I mentioned, you know, our conversation a couple of weeks ago, right? Like with Blake Wheeler, like, is Blake Wheeler at this point in his career at 34 years old, is he more of a second line, you know, winger? And I know Dave would always bring this up, you know, through talking with Pascal, that, you know, I almost think like the hockey world is way too fixated on, you know, first line, second line, third line. But, you know, for the purposes of the argument, you know, the point is, like, should Ehlers be given more even strength minutes, more power play minutes, right? Like, that would be the obvious guy, you know, the Wheeler and Ehlers would flip flop there on the right side, right? But look, you know what you're going to get out of Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, and Blake Wheeler on a line. Like, we've talked about this for years now. And I do think that, you know, probably Nikolai Ehlers is the best winger to play with Pierre-Luc Dubois, just for the simple fact that he's a play driver and he possesses the puck. And he's a guy, you know, that I think they would complement each other. But yeah, there's no doubt, Drew, that, you know, Dubois switching from wing to center to back to wing. I mean, with Stastny coming out of the lineup and back into the lineup, like, that didn't help. And I think we all agree that Dubois is a natural center. He's best suited to be up the middle. Can he play wing if he needs to? Yeah. But, you know, but put it this like way, in an 82 game season, you don't want Dubois playing, you know, half the games on the wing. You want him playing, you know, at least probably 70 to 75 of those games on the wing. So, yeah, he's got to be up the middle, and they have to find, you know, the right line mates. And that's a big question mark because, you know, we know with certainty, like, who's going to be back, but we don't necessarily know, you know, who's going to be the other winger on that second line, right? Like, we know Kyle Connor's your first line left winger. But, you know, is a guy like Andrew Kopp going to be on your second line? Like, so there's a lot of question marks, but absolutely.
You're saying if a guy like, you know, Paul Stastny doesn't return, right. You know, there's a hole in the Jets top six is what you're indicating.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You
know, the way, at least currently, the way the team is structured with the UFAs that are pending, you know, in the next couple of weeks.
And then you could even say guys like maybe Mason Appleton is a guy, but, you know, that could move up to the second line, but Appleton might be chosen by Seattle. Like, we just don't know. There's so many uncertainties. Like, you know, Dave has mentioned this, and I don't think it's preposterous. Like, could Christian Vesalainen get a long look on the second line? Like, could you have a second line, you know, that features, you know, I don't know, Ehlers or Vesalainen, Dubois and Wheeler? Like, there's a lot of uncertainty there. I don't know necessarily.
Four guys on your second line?
I'm saying Ehlers, Vesalainen.
Yeah, okay. Ehlers, Vesalainen. I mean, I think we all expect Connor and Shifley to be together, but who knows? Maybe you have Connor, Dubois, Wheeler. Like, I don't know, but, you know, your question, Drew, was, you know, does Paul Maurice and the coaching staff need to find, you know, that right mix? And absolutely, because like I said before, we know what you're going to get out of, you know, Shifley and Wheeler. So that's why Dubois, you know, he's a key for the Jets. He's an absolute key player for the Jets. Everybody is, like, Kopp is, Lowry is, everybody, but he's one guy that definitely left you wanting more last year.
Well, let me ask you this then. I mean, you look at the Jets forward group, you know who's under contract, you know who's still an RFA, and will, let's assume the RFAs come back. You know, we've been so focused on the Jets back end and the need to shore that up maybe through free agency. Is there a need to shore up the Jets top nine through free agency with another additional forward up front?
Yes,
because to your point, as you mentioned, that, you know, no Roslovic and no Laine, so those two are out of your lineup. Stastny and Perreault, and whatever role Perreault plays, Stastny is no doubt, it, you know, was in the Jets top nine last year. So, Dave, is that maybe an area of free agency that the Jets need to focus on, that maybe as analysts we've been so focused on the blue line, we haven't paid as much attention to the forward group?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, again, to Ezzy's point, or to the one you said, Drew, like, we know who's coming back, but there is definitely going to be that hole. To me, Christian Vesalainen is 22 years old. It's a 2017 first-round draft pick. If you're not going to give him a chance to play in your top six, what the hell is the point of having him on the team? I honestly just don't understand it. You don't make a Christian Vesalainen, who in theory would be a guy who can produce. Like, again, he's not a massive goal scorer. You know, I think he had 19 goals 1 year in Liga. But, I mean, the idea is he's got a good shot. He can fire the puck. I just think, like, you've got to give him an opportunity. And if he isn't, maybe he is a third line winger, you know, and maybe he can play with Adam Lowry and a Mason Appleton, or an Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp, however you want to say it. And you find somebody else. Another guy, I mean, he's 19. I don't like to put a lot of pressure on. I don't like to rush guys. But we had Craig Button on, and we talked about Cole Perfetti. And again, I saw what Cole Perfetti did from the start of his year as a perimeter player to a guy who wasn't afraid to get into the dirty areas. By the end of his tenure with the Manitoba Moose, he's only 19 years old, but the problem is he can't play in the AHL next year. So it'll be a step back for him to play in the OHL. Mm-hmm. I don't like rushing guys into the NHL. You guys know that, but he's a guy who's probably going to earn himself, who has the talent. He can make guys better. He's a facilitator. And you know what? People look at him as a winger, as a center, but, you know, especially as a young guy, starting Cole Perfetti, potentially give him that opportunity. To me, he's a guy who could potentially fit on the top six in a wing position, whether it's with Dubois, whether it's with Shifley, whatever. But the point is, and I don't like, again, like I said, I don't like to put a guy too much on a guy like that, because that's a lot of expectation. But I'm just saying it's like this year was unique for Cole Perfetti. Mm-hmm. Next year is unique for Cole Perfetti, because again, he doesn't benefit from going back to the OHL and putting up 120 points. I don't think he does. I think he would benefit potentially from getting an opportunity with the NHL. But the issue is, of course, you don't want to crush a guy's, you know, if he's not having success. Mm. So I think we're going to see him regardless. I think you're going to see him in training camp, because I know how hard this kid works. So he's going to work his ass off this summer. He'll try and earn himself a spot. It'll be much like Mark Scheifele. He'll have that opportunity, and then the Jets will have to evaluate from there, because obviously they don't want to stunt his growth if they don't think he can play at the NHL level yet. And if he can't, that's not a slight to him, but I think they'll give him that shot. And he has the talent, guys, to make that Jets top six better. No question.
Well, and he's the most, I mean, and thank you for bringing him up, because Perfetti, to your point, is in such a unique position. Because when we had Craig Button on, what was that, 2 weeks ago, talking about prospects, talking about the draft, and just talking, you know, generally about some of the Jets players, you know, he said that, you know, Craig Button himself said that he didn't think Cole Perfetti benefits from going back to the OHL. Mm-hmm. So if you don't benefit from going back to the OHL, which, you know, makes perfect sense, he the only other option is at the NHL level. I mean, he's really between a rock and a hard place, because usually, you know, a guy who doesn't benefit, you know, anybody who they say, well, he doesn't really benefit from going back to the OHL, hasn't had the run in the AHL that Cole Perfetti had last year because of COVID and because of the unique circumstances. So maybe his development curve is more is faster than a typical Winnipeg Jets prospect would be because of what happened last year and because of the uniqueness of last season. But if Cole Perfetti is able to step into the Jets top nine, well, then you don't have to worry about really going out to free agency to shore up that role. But that's the big if. And that's why you're sort of, you know, it's a very delicate juggling act for the Jets in trying to figure out if he truly is ready for that role, Ezzy.
Yeah, and I got to say, boys, I love being on the Cole Perfetti hype train. Like I will be the conductor, I'll be the caboose, whatever. But, like, I love being on this hype train. And this is the thing. Like, you know, people might, again, point out, like Dave said, well, he's 19 years old, you don't want to rush him, all that. The thing with Perfetti, and again, I'm not an amateur scout, you know, in the NHL, but we've watched enough hockey. Like, this guy is on a different level than your average prospect. Like, I would compare him to Ehlers at the same age. Like, I realize that, you know, every player takes different trajectory, but, like, Perfetti has that same skill level. Like, this is a guy that had 111 points in 61 games for Saginaw in the Ontario Hockey League as a 17-year-old. Like, this is a guy who, like Dave said, you watched him way more than I did. I didn't watch him at all with the Moose. I just followed the, you know, the box scores, Dave. But, like, this guy was putting up big numbers. Like, Perfetti, this is the thing too, Drew, I would say, is, like, you know, Perfetti's going to be a big part of your future. And we talked about it at the time. Like, he almost fell into the Jets' lap. Like, a lot of people thought he was going to go fourth overall. I think it was Detroit. Detroit had the fourth overall pick. And a lot of people thought they were going to take him at four. And he slipped to 10. So this is really a top five talent, you could argue. So you know he's going to be a big part of your future. So, like, why not just, you know, if he's ready, you know, start him, whether it's on the second line, third line, doesn't matter. Like, Perfetti has shown, whether it's in the AHL or, you know, whether it's at the World Hockey Championship, like, he can handle himself. He can compete with, you know, 25-year-olds, 29-year-olds, whatever. And it's the same thing, I think, to Cole Caulfield, Drew. Like, these guys are a higher skill level. Like, these are some of the most skilled players in the world. Like, these guys have excelled. Like, when you're talking about Caulfield, you know, like, he did this with the, you know, United States development team. He did it, you know, in university with University of Wisconsin. Like, these guys, like, there's always that element of rushing a guy, but also when you have a player of that type of dynamic skill, like, for example, when we're talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois, I think he could get a lot out of Pierre-Luc Dubois in terms of, you know, just bringing out the best of his offensive game. So yeah, Dave, I think there's absolutely a chance that, you know, Perfetti plays, and I agree. It probably would be to start on the wing, you know, maybe later, you know, in his career, but his best bet probably with the Jets right now is on the wing.
Well, you know, if Perfetti, you know, to bring it, to wrap it around a bit, if Perfetti follows the trajectory, Dave, of Nikolaj Ehlers when he was drafted. So Ehlers was drafted, of course, in 2014, and then he went back and he played that one more season in Halifax. And there was never any thought that when he left Halifax and he came back to the Jets, there was never any thought that, you know, the AHL was an option for him. He went straight from the Halifax Mooseheads almost seamlessly into the Winnipeg Jets top six that year. And, you know, he had a pretty solid rookie year when you look back at it, you know, 38 points in 72 games. And sure, there were some lulls in there, but you know, he never for a second really didn't prove that he belonged at the NHL level. So maybe for Perfetti, the equivalent is the year with the Moose. Maybe that's the equivalent of Ehlers going back to the Mooseheads for one season, and that could be what sort of bridges that gap to make him seamlessly into the NHL level. I think Perfetti is sort of the wild card this offseason for the Winnipeg Jets, and his impact and his influence on the Jets top nine for next year is one of the main storylines to watch, certainly when training camp begins in a couple of months' time. Pleased to welcome to the program now a man who is known for his hair, his handsomeness, and everything else.
The Jim Big Rig.
Big Rig himself joins us on the program now.
True.
Jimmy.
You've never lied to your viewers/listeners, so you got to get handsome out of there. The hair, I'll take. Now you're lying. Just a grizzled old man now.
Well, now that you're one of us, so now that you got the dad look on. I mean, you know, the bags under the eyes might be a little bit more pronounced than they were back in the day, but I'd still say you're looking pretty good there, Mr. Jimmy.
Well, I'll take that. I appreciate it. I got the bed head here. So back in the day, if I'd had the pleasure of waking up at, I don't know, 9 a.m. on any one of your couches on the weekend, this is what it would look like. So now, you know, but those days are long gone.
Those days are long gone.
How are you guys?
We're doing well.
We're
How
good.
Are you?
We're good.
Looking great, like good, I said.
Now I'm lying. Those days aren't long gone. They're just fewer and far between. But yeah, I'm doing good, guys.
The difference is it used to be waking up on one of our couches at 9 a.m. Now it's passing out on now it's falling asleep on your own couch at 9 p.m. That's the difference.
Well, what time is nap time? 9:30 a.m. I'll have one too then if that works.
Exactly right. Jimmy, we obviously brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, talk about the offseason. And we were just talking to start the program about sort of the one Jets player, if you had to identify one guy who needs to produce more, who needs to do more for the team entering next year. Both Ezzy and Dave thought that the number one guy on their list would be Pierre-Luc Dubois. I'll extend Shocker. The question to you as well. You know, who's at the top of your list from current Winnipeg Jets players, forward or defense, that need to provide more impact next season?
Well, I mean, it's obviously it's Pierre-Luc Dubois, but that's because he's underachieved so much in his short time here. And I was listening and watching you guys earlier, and you all made the valid points. Like there, and as I know, you said that there's no excuses, but there really are. Those are excuses. Like if you're looking for a reason why a high-end quality player came into a new situation that was supposedly better and surrounded him with more talent, and it didn't work out. Those are valid excuses. You look to see why it didn't work out. Because the answer is, if it's not, then Pierre-Luc Dubois is an awful hockey player. And he's not. So there were many factors that went into it. I also think that the Jets, and I commend them because they get bashed for this a lot when you talk about breaking up the number one line or giving other people opportunities and things like that. They did everything they could do to get Pierre-Luc Dubois going. He played, I think, with everybody in every situation. And it just wasn't working for him. And I saw a player that was trying to do too much. I think the Pierre-Luc Dubois that comes into a camp, has a full training camp, has some time to understand what the coaches want from him. And even though I'm sure they gave him some clear messages, he's a guy that got traded for Patrick Laine. And he's a guy that initiated the trade. And he knew that coming in here. And there's that subconscious of trying to do way more than you need to do, especially when you're surrounded by this much talent. And he hasn't been. In Columbus. So there are many factors there, but I think he is at the top of the list. But I think it's even ridiculous to say because he's so underachieved that it's the clear one. I'm looking to the youth again, guys. I loved your discussion around Scheifele, and we can get into Wheeler and everything like that. I thought Connor looked better this year, although there's some aspects of his game defensively that I thought looked worse this year. But most of the guys, even Nick Ehlers, I thought those guys continue to get better. This team is at a stage where what is Christian Vesalainen, what is David Gustafson going to bring you? You know, Logan Stanley we saw come in. Is there another guy? So when I look at the roster and I look to see who needs to improve, I'll even say the Mason Appletons. I like everything about Mason Appleton. I really do. But we bash the high-end guys for that Montreal series. And I always say secondary scoring. Who scored for Tampa? Who scored game-winning goals in the Stanley Cup final for Tampa? It wasn't the high-end guys. So I always look when there's improvement. And it's not necessarily a negative thing. Like, I don't look at the youth and go, man, these guys got to get better. I look at them and go, who can get better and how much? And Paul Maurice said earlier in his tenure here, I think he was talking about Jacob Trouba, he had his great rookie season, and then I think it was his third season or fourth season that Maurice got here, and he said going into our training camp, the off season is 5 months. Everybody expects guys to put up 18 goals, come back the next year and score 40. He said realistically, a guy in 5 months can get 10 to 15% better. So if guys come back in and they improve, whether that be, you know what, he's 30% better in his defensive zone, but he put up the same amount of points. It's just who can get better. So when I look to improvements, clearly it's Pierre-Luc Dubois, but I expect more from Pierre-Luc Dubois because he's so underachieved. I look at the youth. I wonder if Mason Appleton's not taken by Seattle, what he brings. I wonder, you know, guys like that, because that's the difference here. We can go down the list, and we probably will. We can go over the roster and the stats and the defensive play of that top line and everything else. But who didn't do what we expected them to do? I mean, I took so much heat this year about Blake Wheeler. Blake Wheeler was 4 points off a point-a-game player again with broken ribs. So forgive me if I don't think he should be in the top six again. Fully healthy, I'll give him that role. Is there somebody that can take his spot? And I used to say this about Laine. Patrick Laine is not the best right winger on this team right now. I know he wants to be. That's good. You want that from your athletes. When he is, I think he will be. But he just wasn't when he was here. So I look at the youth, and because that's realistically what it is. I will get into needs, I'm sure, too, guys. I think they need a defenseman, like everybody knows. I think they need a bottom six Corey Perry kind of guy. I've said this about Pavelski and what he's done in Dallas when he signed there. I go, that's what the Jets need. Matthew Perreault, I really liked his all-round game, but come playoff time, he's just not going to put up 12 points in 18 games. And that's what I think they need, is that secondary scoring, and I think they need a defenseman. But looking to improvement, I look at the youth. I think Mason Appleton has a great upswing, and I like everything about him. But come playoff time, I was told that he could play in the top six for Wheeler. Well, I don't think he could. I didn't see that from him yet. And I know we like to progress that along, but then I always hearken back to Maurice and what other coaches have told me too. If a player can get 10 to 15% better in the offseason and come in and show that, coaches think that's a win. Coaches rarely expect a guy to go away like Appleton and come back and all of a sudden here's 30 goals.
You made me really miss those Laine Wheeler debates, Jim, that we used to have like, you know, a year, 2 years ago, and even going back further, you know, those great debates that we used to have about, you know, whether Brian Little was a second line center or not. I love, you know, getting nostalgic.
The thing great about those debates is because they literally changed. Like right. One day I would be like, when Patrick Laine is 24, 25 and he packs on 18 pounds of muscle, this guy is going to be, and then the next month you'd be go, does this guy even care? Like, and then the next month you would go, who cares if he cares? He's outstanding. And then you would go, like, those are what made the debates fun, is because they changed so often. You had so many things to actually discuss with them.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned the expansion draft and it's 11 days away. It seems like, you know, we've been waiting for it for years, but then it also seems like it's too soon. And it's crazy that they've already started to schedule, you know, Seattle Kraken preseason games. But, you know, are you expecting it to be quite predictable? Because, like, we've been talking about it the last few weeks on the show. And, you know, I think everybody, you know, is expecting the tough decision to be, you know, between Logan Stanley and Dylan DeMello. But, like, I was saying last week, like, I think there's a really good chance that you're going to see a Toby Enstrom-type deal, and the Jets are going to just make sure that, you know, they're still able, you know, to protect Logan Stanley. Do you, like, is that what you see happening? You mentioned Mason Appleton. Like, in your mind, is it basically, like, Appleton or maybe Jansen Harkins, and then the Jets will just swing, you know, a deal involving draft picks so that they can keep Stanley? I feel like this isn't going to be, you know, necessarily as unpredictable as some people think.
I think it will be more predictable. And I think there was a lot that was learned from that Vegas expansion draft from both sides, from both the league, from both other teams, all three sides, and from Vegas. Ron Francis is one of the smartest GMs and one of the smartest hockey guys. So I think he will. I don't think they'll be as successful as building a contender like the Vegas Golden Knights were. And the cap will weigh into that. The thing that's lost in the Vegas Golden Knights and the great job that they did was teams like Florida and Minnesota and stuff were unloading cap. They saw it as a way that I don't care which player we let go unless we can alleviate some money. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't the starting goaltender anymore in Pittsburgh, but it was because of his number that they wanted to get rid of him. So I think that I think it will be a lot more predictable, but I do think there's some surprises out there, and especially with the flat cap. So I'm not convinced, guys, that if they leave Dylan DeMello exposed, that they that Seattle takes him. I think they do, but the more I think about it, it really depends on what defensemen are also available. Right. And then I think like Ron Francis, if you look at the defense he built in Carolina, is Dylan DeMello a Ron Francis type of defenseman? Dylan DeMello is a really good, solid, stay-at-home defenseman. He's not going to put up points or anything like that. At $3 million, that's a bargain. Like, that's really good. But, you know, if Ron Francis goes, you know what, I can get these two guys, we have the cap space, $3 million fits really nicely in, but he's probably going to end up being 5'6". Now, that being said, we all know that the last expansion draft, didn't they take 4,800 defensemen? Like, they just started, like, shipping guys to the AHL and stuff. So I could be wrong on that. But the reason I would protect Logan Stanley is because I don't know what he is yet. And what I've seen from him so far is good. Is he as good as Dylan DeMello? I don't think so, defensively, for sure. But I know what Dylan DeMello is, and I know what I'm going to get from him. I would think you could find another Dylan DeMello if need be, or maybe even in your organization. Like, it's really up to the – these are the things we don't know, how the team sort of slots in a Dylan Samberg. Is like, would it surprise anyone if the Jets put him in the AHL again for half the year at the start and go like, no, we still don't think he's ready, even though everybody's screaming for him? It wouldn't surprise me. But if they think he's ready, then they go, you know what? There's our DeMello, and we believe in him, and we think that he can do that. So those are the factors when everybody's going, guess who they leave exposed. Well, those are the conversations I want to know. Even with Mason Appleton, Mason Appleton to me seems like a Ron Francis guy. I think that he's kind of that type of player. He's hard-nosed. He's gritty. He can get things done. And I think there's more scoring coming from him eventually as he goes forward. I don't think he's a 40-goal guy, but I think he could put up 25 a year and maybe 50 points, and I think that's probably his ceiling. I could be wrong, and I'd love for him to prove me wrong, but I think people are sort of overvaluing him because he's so important to this roster when compared to general, can you find guys like that? So I do, to answer your question, long-winded, Ezra, I think that it is going to be more predictable, but I still think there's going to be some surprises there. And I think at the end of the day, when you look at it, at the surprises and the predictability, you're going to go, wow, that's a Ron Francis team. That looks like a Carolina Hurricanes roster.
Jim Toth is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Nice to see so many friends in the chat. We remind you, smash that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already done so.
You know, Jim, I was reading a Sportsnet article that was asking a question of every single NHL team for the upcoming season. And I had to, once I finished scrolling to the bottom to read about the Winnipeg Jets, I scrolled back to the top to make sure I was reading an article in 2021. And not an article from 2020, because the question was about the Jets defense. And again, I wrote about it in the morning papers. I said, this could have been written last year. And it's the same question the Jets have this year. Is the number one priority, and I, it seems like a, you know, almost a rhetorical question, but like, does Kevin Cheveleyev absolutely have to address his defense in a significant manner, not allowing just like little things to happen? Does he have to go out and make a big splash to improve his defense this year?
Yes, he does. And I could leave it at that, but I know how those are terrible questions or answers. Remember when you have a guest on, they'd be like, yes.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate your insight.
What else are you doing today? What else you got going on? But yes, he does. I don't think that's a question anymore. But what I do think that I think he has been trying. I think like I watched Savard set up that goal in Tampa Bay in the final. And I thought, well, that was a first round pick. And then I thought, well, would that have gotten the Jets past Montreal? Probably not. But, you know, you don't think of it that way at the time you're making those deals. You're like, does this improve our team? Yes, it does. I think he does. I really do, Dave. I think that he's – and I think he's trying. I think he's kicked the tires. Well, every team has checked in on Seth Jones. And I know that Dougie Hamilton is one of the favorites. But here's what I think happens. I think he's going to kick the tires on that. But getting those guys to come to Winnipeg is tough. And the latest I read from Elliot Friedman, I just did it this morning on his 33 thoughts this week, was that Philadelphia was all in on Seth Jones, but he won't commit. So I think Columbus is tough because we all know Philly likes to throw out, and Philly's a good team, and they like to throw money around. So for me, I think that Seth Jones, you know, it's going to be his decision. They're going to get a lot less on where he goes if he goes anywhere, but they have to ship him somewhere because he's not staying. But if he's not willing to sign like Jacob Trouba did, I don't know. Like, and maybe Seth Jones just doesn't want to go to Philadelphia and he pulls a Trouba. Like, I'm only going to the Rangers and I want $8 million, and they figure it out that way. But I think he kicks the tires on those and he tries. I think he always tries on those. What I think happens is you see something like a Neil Pionk deal get done. I think you see a guy that, you know, it's maybe not flashy, splashy, a $4 or $5 million guy that he ends up bringing in, and they solidify it that way. And then I think Heinola's in the lineup next year, or Sandberg, one of the two. And then you wait to see if it's DeMello or Stanley gone off that blue line, or Appleton. If Appleton's gone, I don't mind that. You bring in a guy, get a guy. But yeah, I do think he has to address it. I do think he tries to address it. I just don't know that he can convince guys like that. Like, I was one of the big guys that I said, you know, what's Pietrangelo going to get? And I thought he was going to get 8 or 9. And I said, why don't you go to him in this market and go, you know, Alex, here's a 2-year, $22 million contract. We can afford that. We just traded Line A. Come here for 2 years. Help us get over the hump. You're going to make $20 million plus in a cap, or $10 million per in a cap strap year. And then you'll be 31 years old when you're UFA again. Maybe the world opens up. Maybe there's more money for you to go wherever you want to go. Now, Vegas stepped up and did something that I didn't think they could do. And they couldn't. They dressed less than 20 skaters twice this year because of that move. And everybody goes, Vegas just gets it done. Vegas didn't get it done. Look at your locker room when there's only 16 guys sitting there for a game, and try to explain that to them. Like, now, are you happy at Alex Pietrangelo? For sure you are. But I don't like that way of doing business. I think you handicap yourself that way. And I can't imagine a coach going in and going, okay, well, you know, you're going to play a lot tonight. I know you like that. But I can't imagine there weren't players in that locker room that didn't go, we're only dressing how many tonight and why? Mm-hmm. Like, so I do think he goes after one. I think it's the number one need. And I think maybe it's not just a deal just because of the finances of it. And then also, like, I would pay for Pietrangelo. I really would. I don't know what I would pay for Dougie Hamilton. It'd be a lot. And then Seth Jones, too. I don't, like, if you're talking 9-10 million, I don't know about that. And if it's 8, I look at it, but it's got to fit. I would go more Dougie Hamilton for 8 million than Seth Jones. But I believe he's going to make a move. I believe he has to answer your question, Dave. And I think it's going to be more along the lines of someone that's more than willing to come here, maybe at a lesser cost, but he fits in with everything that's here and just adds to what they already have. And what they already have is, you know, they've got to get some good quality minutes. You don't need a guy to come in and play 27 minutes. You need a guy to come in to play 18, 19, very good defensive minutes and move that puck. They got to move that puck out. And if you can find somebody that can do that and it costs $4 or $5 million, I think he does it.
Jimmy, I think one of the most sort of not talked about aspects of this offseason from the Jets' perspective is the Andrew Kopp conundrum. He's a guy who's RFA, he's arbitration eligible, and he's 1 year away from UFA status. We know his agent is Kurt Overhart, who always drives a tough bargain for his players. Do you see Andrew Kopp here as a long-term signing a long-term 4 or 5 year deal? Or do you think that maybe he gets dangled as a trade possibility sometime between now and either the draft or the start of free agency, or even before that, the expansion draft potentially?
Yeah, I just don't see Andrew Kopp being here long-term. And I don't see it, Drew, because the great thing about Andrew Kopp is nobody believes more in Andrew Kopp than Andrew Kopp does. The bad thing when negotiating is no one believes more in Andrew Kopp than Andrew Kopp does. Andrew Kopp said, and I loved it last year, and I said it many times back in the old days when we had a show on the station, that, you know, the Patrick Laines who want number one lines and all that, like, are they better players than Kopp? Yeah, but what did Kopp say? I believe I'm a second line center on this team, but I'm not going to ask for it. I'm going to earn it. What did he do this year? Like, he had a really good, solid year this year. Mm-hmm. I'm just not convinced, and he's one of the guys that I was sort of on, and again, to go back to what I already said, I'm all for bashing the Kopps, the Wheelers, the Scheifleys, sorry, the Connors, for not scoring against Montreal. What did Andrew Kopp put up for points against that? Like, those are the guys that if your top guys aren't going, I'm all for bashing the top guys, but you've got to get some secondary scoring. And from the regular season, I always thought that was going to be Andrew Kopp. I really, over Mason, Appleton, or anything. So, but I give him credit. He believes in himself. He's really good. And so when it comes to this contract, and we all heard what he said when he went through arbitration last time, he believes in himself. I think if, and I don't think he thinks he's a $7 million guy, but if he believes, and I'm just throwing this out there, I don't know, if he believes he's 5 per, if he believes he's worth more than Adam Lowry, then I think he's going to wait to get it. And that's just the kind of guy Andrew Kopp is. And I kind of dig that. Like, I give him credit for that. But I don't think he's the Adam Lowry type that Adam Lowry goes, you know, in the open market, I could get 4.5. Maybe there'd be a team out there crazy enough. Islanders, back in the day, give me 5. for 3 years. But I fit here. I like it here. It's a good system. I thrive in it. And this is my value. So I'm okay with it. I don't think that's Andrew Kopp. Andrew Kopp thinks he's going to get better every year. Andrew Kopp has gotten pretty much better every year. And I think he's going to want that money when it comes to him. He's a big guy. If we all forget, he's involved in the return to play committee. He watches the NHL. Remember when the COVID restrictions came out? He was very vocal about that. He knows how the game works in the front office, and he's going to get as much as he can. And I just don't know if – it's not like the Jets wouldn't want him, but if he wants five or six per, they're not going to pay a guy of that caliber. I've always said Kevin Schimmel-Dayoff has this great track record, whether it's longevity of contracts or money. He doesn't overpay, but he doesn't underpay. And it always works out to within a year. You might have a guy for a year too long where he doesn't produce, but then his contract's up. Or you might have a guy where he's underpaid for a couple of years, and that's just the kind of way he deals out. So he'll offer him a fair contract, but I doubt that Andrew Kopp long-term thinks that that's what he's worth.
I think you make a lot of good points, Jim, because it goes back to that kind of old argument that, you know, it seems like we talk about, you know, every time this year, or usually it's more so around Canada Day as opposed to July 28th. But with free agency, like, do you want to be paying a guy $4 or $5 million a year? I agree. It's probably going to be closer to $5 million a year to be a third line guy, especially in a flat cap world. Right. So I agree with you 100%. I think that
well, remember Michael Frolik, like we all knew Michael Frolik. And I said this at the time, I think he got a 5-year deal in Calgary. And I said, Calgary's going to love that deal for 3.5, 4 years. They're going to hate that 5-year deals. The Jets would have paid him that. I think they offered him that for 4 years and he took the extra year. And we all heard that maybe his fiance at the time wanted to be in Calgary or something like that. But that contract didn't pan out well, and that's not what the Jets do. The Jets, you know, if you're a $4 million guy and you got about 3 years left at that rate, we'll give that to you. But if you want $4 million over 5 or 6 years, we're not doing that.
Yeah, same absolutely.
With a guy like Ben Chiarot. I mean, Ben Chiarot, the Jets were, you know, were in it, but Montreal just, you know, went that extra year, went that extra million, whatever it was, I can't recall. But, I mean, the Jets were right in it, but Montreal just outbid them, which is, you know, speaks
and
to
Drew,
the point.
Yeah, and you're right. And you guys know that, Drew. To that's Kevin Schimmel-Dayoff's puzzle. He has a board up that includes up to 2030.
Probably.
And he has guys slotted in there and who's coming up and who's not going and who's – and they forecast. And they're like – and that's why I say, like, they must laugh at all of us because we all sit here and we go, is Dylan Sandberg ready? And Chevy must sit back in his chair, put his feet up, look up on the board and go like, well, I got Sandberg ready in a year and a half. And so he must just kill himself laughing about this. And when we all go, where's Sandberg? Or Sandberg puts up 3 points for the Moose or Hinola. And he's already got it slated out. Now, I think they'll give or take. Like, I think he wanted to see more of Hinola. Like he mentioned in his press conference. But that's just what he does. So if Andrew Kopp wants 6 years, he probably looks at it and he goes, you know what? I need Andrew Kopp for 4 years. And then I think I'll have this or I'll have that or whatever. And that's just the way he does business, like it or not.
Well, and he's also got a list of top haircuts in Winnipeg sports media. And Jim is actually just in permanent marker number one. And then it's just everybody else after. I wanted to ask Drew if it's okay. I had a question that I wanted to ask Jim. Oh, it's not.
No, I said go, not no.
Oh, no. Okay.
I would have been better if you said no, Drew, and then just asked the question.
Yeah, like I think my question's pretty good. But, you know, just getting away from the Jets for a second, because, you know, we're talking about, you know, salary cap and you know, different moves that teams are going to make. Like watching that, you know, final between the Lightning and Montreal, and I do really want to ask you about, you know, Nikita Kucherov completely just throwing the Montreal Canadiens fan base under the bus, in addition to Marc-Andre Fleury and Connor Hellebuyck as well, when he was talking about Andrei Vasilevskiy, but and the new Bud Light deal, of course. But no, I wanted to ask you about like Tampa Bay and kind of what you see them doing in addition to losing all these players, because we know like Tyler Johnson, most likely, you know, if he's not taken by Seattle, like he's gone, you know, you might lose Alex Killorn, Blake Coleman, Barclay Goodrow. These guys are free agents. David Savard, who you mentioned earlier, like he's most likely not coming back. Like, I guess the question I have, Jim, is like, do you see Tampa Bay being able to put out a team like a behemoth like they did this year? Because I think it's going to be really tough for them. Forget, you know, how many teams, you know, have actually three-peated. I mean, it's a very short list, as you know, but like, I just think Tampa Bay is going to lose way too much depth next year.
Well, they are. And I thought the best post-game quote, now I shouldn't say that because Nikita Kucherov was pure fire. Like I loved everything about it. And I'm a big Kucherov fan. So
especially the chest hair, Jim.
Oh, I mean, and the Jim Toth body. but plus 20 pounds. But I thought it was like, man, you're not as elite ripped as I thought you were for a guy that does that. But yeah, the unkept chest hair and just the wear though. He looked like my dad at a wedding. Are we not having a good time? Huh? Are we not having a good time? But the second best quotes that I will say was when Stamkos admitted that we've talked about the cap twice during this playoff run, that this is our last chance. This is a lot of us aren't going to be here because of the cap. And that speaks volume to me because players always, much like Dave said about the media and what they say, they pay attention to that. And they know that, like, they go, oh, that's not our business. That's front office. And we just play with the guys that are here. They know. They said that twice during this playoff run. They looked at each other and they said, look, a lot of this group is going to be broken up. We need to do this year. And it is. I think that, you know, and a lot of people will ride that Kucherov hip surgery injury and all that. But what people forget is it's a 56-game schedule. If it was an 82-game schedule, they would have had to have done something. So that's one of the reasons why I don't like what they did, but every team does what they did with the cap. Every team does. The Jets waived Perreault this year to make some space, knowing that nobody would claim him and keep him that way. So I'm not upset with that. Now, if it was an 82-game schedule, I would understand that because most injuries, surgeries, 6 months at the most, he would have to come back and they'd have to do something with that cap. But they do, and this team's going to look way differently. I'm more interested in who's going to overpay the Goodrows and the guys like that because that happens when you've got a couple rings. You know, these guys are such solid players. I thought it was brilliant by Brisebois to make those deals and bring those guys in because I thought that was the difference for them on many nights in both Stanley Cup runs. But are they $5 million players? No, but somebody might do that. I think the Jets should be all over those guys. And I think the Jets should be the team that if they're $3 million per for 3 to 4 years, you should add a mil to that to try and get those kind of guys here. But I wouldn't go more than that. Like I would overpay, but I wouldn't overpay that much. But I think it's going to look vastly different. And I think that, you know, I still say if I'm Seattle and I know he's from Spokane, Washington, do I want Tyler Johnson for 3 more years? Can he play in my top six at $5 million? And if he can, I take a Goodrow or I make another deal for something else that has youth. Like that's what I love about Appleton is Appleton might not be a Tyler Johnson resume and that kind of points, but is he going to be? And if he is, then I grab him. That's why I protect Logan Stanley because I know what Dylan DeMello is. What if Logan Stanley starts putting up 20 points a year and crushes everybody? So I think Tampa Bay is going to look vastly different, and I am fascinated by it. And I was really disappointed that they got away with the 56-game schedule and the surgery not having to do it this year because that was my number one thing I was watching this last offseason was who goes in and robs them blind, who does things that does that. And, you know, my buddy Jamie Pusher I grew up with in Lethbridge works for Tampa Bay, and he was here scouting a year ago, and I was talking to him in the press box. And I said, are you here looking at Jets? And he goes, no, we're looking at San Jose because San Jose apparently has put on the for sale sign on the front yard and everybody's available. And then I was texting with him and I said, you know, or I ran into him again and I looked at the Goodrow and I looked at the other guys that they brought in. And then he said, well, it's basically because it's the mill. Like it's we need those guys. But I mean, and he didn't go as far as to tell me what their primary initiatives were, but it was clear that they were to go find gritty, strong, good hockey players that don't make $3 million a year. And they did it. So I give them full credit for that. But I'm fascinated on what they do.
Yeah, I was going to just say the Jets could really use first off, a good Lethbridge boy, but they could use like a good right shot physical stay-at-home defenseman like Jamie Pusher. Just wanted to get that in there. He was a really good defenseman.
There you go. Yeah, I like to say that, and he laughs at that himself. But he'll say, I always asked him where the points were, and he said, well, that's my job to keep them out, not put them in. But he's got some great stories because he was a rookie in 97 when Detroit won. And then the next year at the deadline when they went back-to-back, they traded him for Ozilinch in Anaheim. But he's got some fabulous stories about, like, he was a healthy scratch one game in Edmonton when I was working in Northern Alberta and went to see there. And I took a buddy with me who was just a hockey fanatic. And he was asking him questions about Eisman. What's Eisman like? And what's this like? And he's like, when he got to Fedorov, Jamie just sort of looked at him and goes, I really don't want to look at Fedorov because he takes great pleasure in going around me in practice. and so we laugh because it was like, oh, yeah, I don't know. He goes, no, like he goes out of his way for me to. Like he would just roast him nightly in practice or day after day, just like undress him and stuff. And he's like, he would purposely, and then he'd always say, push again, let's go again. And so, no, I'm good. Thanks. Practice is over. So, but yeah, I mean, getting back to that, I'm fascinated by Tampa Bay. Like, I think that what they do and how they do it, and let's be honest, it's going to hurt. Like, there are going to be deals there that when those phones are hung up, that it's just going to be like a gut punch after gut punch after gut punch, I think.
Now, Jimmy, we'll get you out of here with this last Jets. We'll bring it back to the Jets, though. I'm not one to rush guys from the AHL. I think it's always good to give them that opportunity to develop. But one player who doesn't have that opportunity next year, coming off kind of the most unique year probably of his life, is Cole Perfetti. And he had a real good year with the Moose. And I saw the games. He went from, like I said, a perimeter player to a guy who wasn't afraid to get those dirty areas. We talked to Craig Button 2 weeks ago. He said, you know, who said, you know, going to the OHL is not going to be the benefit if he has to. Do you see this guy as a player who could potentially, at 19 years of age, be an option for that Winnipeg Jets team next year? And if not, do you see them saying, well, we're going to have to send him back to the OHL?
You know, that's such a fascinating question, Dave, because I'm with you on that. I know you and I think a lot alike when it comes to development. And I just, the problem with that is what's he going to prove there? Like, he's already proven he's a bona fide AHL player. Mm-hmm. He's already gone to the World Championships, and I know he didn't play much, but, you know, he's just going to get better. It's that age-old question where, and I fear it doesn't happen very often, but it might be for Perfetti, is are you getting worse? Are you picking up bad habits because you don't have to do some of the things you learned to do at a higher level? So I don't know. That's a tough one. I think it really depends on I would like to see the team, and I think they are going to make a run at Stastny at a much lower cost and say, like, look, if you want to do this, I know you can probably get a 2-year, $12 million deal somewhere. If you want to be here for 2 years at $3 million per, I'll give you a third year. And just, you know, you might eventually end up being our fourth line center, and if you're okay with that, but we'd love to have you around. If that happens, I don't know what they do with Perfetti, but I think it's one of the reasons they'd like to do it is to have him around it. So I'm going to say, and normally I would say send him back to junior. 95% of the time I would say that. The problem is I think he's already past that. And I know people will say that in the past, that, well, Scheifele had passed the OHL, but Scheifele wasn't NHL ready. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that Scheifele wasn't AHL ready when he went back, even though he had passed the OHL at that point. I think Perfetti is so far past the OHL point that he could just pick up some bad habits. He's just going to absolutely dominate that league. So I think they have to find a spot for him here. And I think that they might have to put him on the wing and they might have to, you know, put him on a fourth line or whatever. But it wouldn't surprise me also that if they brought them in and they look at how things pan out and if Stastny's not here, that maybe they fit him into the top six and go with that. Hey, I mean, and I hate to knock him because I'm a big Kyle Connor fan, and I know defensively people just lose their minds about it, and rightfully so. Like, I would like to see him get better than he was this year. I thought he would take a step this year. But you look at his defensive woes, and you bring in a Cole Perfetti and put him on a wing with some of those guys in the top six, it can't get any worse. So, I think that, you know, I think he is on this roster just because of that. I think if he goes back to the OHL, he'll have 40 points in 15 games and he'll be riding a bus and he'll start getting those habits where I just scored without even trying. So, you know, it's hard for players at that level and we all look at it and we'll look at the season. But in my mind, for a guy like that, when it's February and it's a Wednesday night and you're in the Sioux, like, it takes a lot for a young man of that age to be totally engaged in that game like you would be an AHL game or something else like that. And I don't know the young man at all. I just know that he looks a little bit younger than my newborn. I would think that he has drive and all that stuff, but that's just tough at that level to go from the AHL, to go from the World Championships, to go back and just try and get better every single day. So I do think they have to find a spot for him just because there is no other place for him to play.
Jim Toth is a good friend of ours. He's a new dad. Congratulations on that, Jimmy. And
I did very little, as she'll tell you.
And our audience can hear you. You're on OB some this summer. Is that right?
Yeah, I just agreed to fill in for some summer holidays there. I mean, I used to work there. I'm still really good friends with everybody there. And they asked if I wanted to do some fill-in shifts. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I'm very thankful for the opportunity. I was back there a day or two ago. And then at the end of the month, Christian O'Malley on the sports show is going on vacation. So he's allotted me to some time to go in and probably do a much worse job than he does for a week. And we'll see how that goes. But hey, guys, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. You know, I've listened for a long time before the 1290 days. And I don't always get up on Saturday and take it in, but I definitely take it in Saturday afternoon on YouTube. So congrats for continuing on one of the longest running shows in our city, and deservedly so. So always a pleasure. I'll do it anytime. And I'm good to see all you guys.
Likewise, yeah, our pleasure, well, Jim. We'll tune in to listen to you here on OB and anywhere else we can find your opinions on Twitter as well, of course. Appreciate your time, Jimmy. Thanks, buddy.
All right. And as a new father, hopefully I'm less angry on Twitter. I hope that's a little bit, but I never know. Dave and I will talk about that one day again, too. Good to see you guys. Thanks for having me. All the best to everybody watching.
See you, Jimmy. Take care. When we come back, more Jets talk. Dominic Toninato signs a 2-year contract extension with Winnipeg. We'll talk about next. We'll take our first commercial break. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Big shout out to all of our sponsors. They make this show a reality. We strongly encourage you to support all of the local businesses that help make Illegal Curve Hockey come to fruition. Gentlemen, great times there with Jimmy Toth. Always nice to catch up with Big Rig. Haven't seen him in a while. Always a presence in the press box, but given the circumstances of this past year, of course, with COVID and everything else, presences in press boxes were in a much different manner. Let's get back talking about the Winnipeg Jets. They announced a contract extension earlier this week, and I think it sort of came out of a little bit out of left field, but it does make a lot of sense. Dominic Toninato, a guy that Jets fans really only saw briefly this year, but he had an impact, of course, getting the game-winning goal in game one of the playoffs against the Edmonton Oilers. He signs a 2-year deal in Winnipeg. The first year is a 2-way deal between the AHL and the NHL. And then the second year of the deal is a 1-way only contract worth $750,000 at the NHL level. I guess, first of all, were you surprised to see Toninato and the Jets come to a 2-year contract extension?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned this on Twitter, Drew. I saw, like, you know, that also gives the Jets another player to expose in the Seattle expansion draft, right? So I think we would all agree that, you know, Jansen Harkins and Mason Appleton would be above Dominic Toninato on the depth chart for Ron Francis and the Kraken, right? Like, I don't think anybody's going to deny that. But, like, Toninato's a good, useful player. Like, you know, he scored the goal in the Edmonton series, like, game-winning goal in the Edmonton series. Like, this is a guy that, you know, even though he's kind of one of those, like, fringe NHL players, like, he's an NHL player. And if he does play a little bit with the Moose, he's going to be a top six forward. I think Dave would agree with that. He's skilled. Like, this is not a player who, you know, you would just say, oh, you know, he's just going to be a guy on the fourth line who's not going to do much. Toninato's a useful player. So I like the signing. And hey, it was some news when we haven't had any Jets news in about 3 months. But no, I mean, like, you know, good for him. Toninato is a guy, like, Dave can talk a little bit more about him, but, like, Toninato is a guy that works hard, and that's not easy, right, guys, to be on the taxi squad all year. The taxi squad is not something that we'd ever seen before. And by all accounts, Toninato was a guy, like, a more of a veteran, right? Like, he's not, you know, the oldest player, but he's not, you know, 21 years old either. You know, in his mid-20s. So he's a guy that, you know, everybody on the Jets said just worked hard and, you know, set good examples for the younger players. So, you know, just nice for him to be rewarded with the 2-year deal.
27 years old, Dominic Toninato, having just turned that earlier this year in March.
That's mid-20s still.
Yeah, you're fine. Maybe I just wanted to be specific.
I think once you're 28, you're in your late 20s. Okay. Doesn't matter, though, for you, Drew. You're in your late 60s. So let's go.
I had a good run. One day I'll tell you about living through the 70s. That was entertaining.
Yeah. What was it like to ride a penny farthing to work?
Drew, what was it like when you were protesting the war?
Hey, I'll never forget it. It was fantastic.
Drew, what was Woodstock like?
Which one?
the first one. So yeah. No, I'm not terribly surprised by the contract. I think he fit in well with the system. He's part of the Minnesota Mafia. I mean, he's a Duluth, Minnesota guy. He clearly fit in. I mean, he obviously had a tough start with COVID and not being available and that sort of thing kind of derailed the start of his season, an already unusual season. But it was clear, like I said, when I talked to him when he came down to the Moose to get some games in for Manitoba, it was clear, like, this guy, like, just wanted to play hockey. You know, he was really excited at that opportunity. And as I wrote about at the time and talked about after he signed the contract, he fit in well, right? He looked good with Cole Perfetti, who had, I think, all three primary assists on the three goals he scored in three games. He scored three goals, actually, in two games, but played three games for Manitoba. He's got some decent hands, as we saw, you know, on the game-winning goal against the Oilers. And he can skate. And, you know, like I said, to me, he's one of those guys. He's not necessarily an everyday NHLer for you, but if you need a guy to come in who's not going to burn you, he's a guy who can probably do that for you. So I think he's those type of players that every team needs. He's the type of guy who's just going to fill a role if needed, but most likely you've got him to be in the AHL. And then if you have a depth move, then that's where you're going to go to. And I think that's kind of the idea that people sometimes forget. It's like it was funny because when we tweeted it, someone was like, well, now it's done. You know, the summer can start because this signing. But the truth is that these are the types of depth moves that that all organizations have to make. So I think you have a guy who likes your organization, you know, relatively local, you know, in quotes. But and I think, you know, there's a fit there for both sides. So that's why I'm not surprised that the deal got done.
So let me walk our audience through how this impacts the expansion draft, because you would say, well, you know, Dominic Cannonato's a fringe NHLer. This shouldn't have a significant impact on the expansion draft. Let me sort of try and explain as best as I can how it does. Each team needs to expose a minimum of two players who have played either 27 games the previous season or 54 games combined, playoffs and regular season, over the last 2 years. Dominic Toninato has played exactly 54 NHL games between last year and 2 years ago. He played a whole bunch of games with the Florida Panthers a couple years ago. Yeah, 45, 46 games, even including a couple playoff games. Playoff games in that instance were the bubble games, like the the wild card round or whatever the hell, the play-in round.
Three games for Florida there.
Right, so he's played exactly 54 games. So the Jets currently, if you take away all the guys that they are likely to protect, they now have three players who qualify for that 27-54 rule. Mason Appleton, Jansen Harkins, and Dominic Toninato. If the Jets were going to make a move with a player up front, for me, that player would be Andrew Kopp. If they were to trade Andrew Kopp and then protect, presumably, Mason Appleton, they needed to sign Toninato or Trevor Lewis or Matthew Perreault or Nate Thompson. They chose Toninato, obviously, so that they would have the two forwards who would meet that 27-54 rule. They have now done that, so it does open up a little more possibility. I don't have any insight or any prediction that it's going to lead to an Andrew Kopp trade or another trade among a Jets forward between now and next Saturday, when the expansion draft lists have to be released to the NHL by each team when they have to submit their protected list. But it does open up the possibility for the Winnipeg Jets to now make another trade. Interesting. Yep. So I think it's a useful signing in that it adds organizational depth, where the Jets truly don't have a ton of organizational depth right now with their forward group. They've drafted way more defensemen as of late, and their defensive prospects have way more depth. But there is that other piece to this puzzle that I think that does factor in there a little bit with, and something to keep an eye on over the next week, I would say.
You know who I was thinking, guys, that kind of, you know, Dominic Toninato is going to play that role. Maybe Dave agrees with or disagrees. He kind of plays that Patrice Cormier type of role, right? Like a guy that you probably expect to play a lot of the season in the American Hockey League, but he's a guy that's very dependable when you put him in the NHL. And he's probably not going to give you a lot of offense. Like Toninato, you know, has scored, you know, at the American Hockey League level, and certainly with, you know, University of Minnesota Duluth, he had a great career with them, you know, playing alongside Neil Pionk. But like, these types of players are important. Assuming that, you know, Seattle doesn't take Toninato in the expansion draft, like Toninato is a guy that could be very useful. And then it becomes that kind of, you know, that argument about, you know, would you rather have a guy like Toninato or would you rather have a guy like Marco Dano? Like if you need a guy to plug in on the fourth line, would you rather have like a dependable veteran two-way player, or would you want to have a player, let's be honest, like Marco Dano is more of a kind of offensive-minded player, right? You're not saying
he's an RFA for the Jets.
Well, I know, but the point I'm trying to make here is like a guy like Toninato, having those types of players in your organization are useful, right? Like I kind of look at like he's like I mean, Arturi Lehkonen is a regular NHL player, you know, who's playing in Montreal's top six. But to have those guys that can just plug in on the fourth line, but also, you know, will probably spend a lot of time in the American Hockey League, like it's a valuable player. So he's, you know, again, like we don't expect him to score 20 goals for the Jets next year, but, you know, it's a good signing. And you're right, Drew, it does kind of give the Jets more flexibility. And Andrew Kopp is the big wild card. I think, you know, if Andrew Kopp is re-signed, and protected, then everybody assumes that it's going to be Appleton or Jansen Harkins that's taken by Seattle. I agree with Jim Toth. I think, you know, Appleton would probably be more attractive just based on, you know, his production, his cap hit, everything like that. But yeah, again, it was just nice to have a signing, guys. Nice to have some Jets news to talk about. It's been a while.
It has been a while. The trade rumors are going to heat up around the NHL. When we come back, Michael Trakos, the national hockey writer for Post Media, is going to join us. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup final. We'll talk about the Jets. We'll talk about all the rumors, tons of names being bandied about as being available via trade. And then free agency, of course, is only about 18 days away. Much more hockey talk to come. Michael Trakos of Post Media joins us next. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. We're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. A good opportunity while we await the arrival of Michael Trakos to remind everybody about the busy July that is ahead for us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In addition to our regular Saturday shows, those will continue unabated throughout the course of the month. We have special broadcasts upcoming for you, a special live broadcast for the NHL expansion draft. That's coming up on Wednesday, the 21st. So 11 days from now, Wednesday, July 21st, a special live broadcast related to the expansion draft. Friday, July 23rd, a special live broadcast related to day one, round one of the NHL draft. Day two of the NHL draft coverage will be a part of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Saturday, July 24th.
Also celebrating Ezzy's birthday.
Also celebrating Ezzy's birthday. It coincides.
I'll be jumping out of a large cake for that show.
Well, that's something we can all look forward to, especially then as you eat the cake that you've jumped out of to really make it a complete,
well, that's how I'm going to get out. I'm going to eat myself out, Drew.
It's going to be disturbing for everybody. And then the final show, the final special broadcast, Wednesday, July 28th. That's the opening of free agency that night. We're going to do a free agency day one recap show. So a lot of exciting broadcasts in store for you between now and the end of July, when we're going to start our usual monthly hiatus in August, when the NHL season shuts down and when we spend a month with our families and then they get sick of us and say, okay, go back to doing the show come September. So that's something we can all look forward to.
You mentioned that, Drew. Like, we always joke about that. Like, you know, we say, like, whenever, like, because typically you're going back to the TSN 1290 days, we would always take August off, right? Like, after August long weekend. And we'd always joke that, like, Dave isn't going to, you know, get in touch with us, or we're not going to be able to reach Dave for a month, which is true. But what ends up happening, I find every year, we've been doing the show for over 12 years now, I find that, you know, by the time it gets to the second, third week of August, you start to miss doing the show. So it's a weird thing. Like, for us, like, it's essentially hockey is a 12-month-a-year thing, right?
Dave, he just for the record, he said miss doing the show. He didn't say miss each other. There is a difference between the two, no, I would say.
Look, I understand what Ezzy's talking about, and I do agree. But I just think, like, I think what you do is you come to appreciate that month because we do spend so much time covering hockey on the show, on the website. Yeah. And I think as a result, like, you really recharge the battery. You get a chance to kind of reset everything. Some of us, you know, explore MB. And I think that it's good. I think it's helpful for all of us. Obviously, the illegalcurve.com website continues to run rain or shine throughout the course of the month of August. So we'll still have some capacity for Jets coverage. But it gives us an opportunity to kind of put the mics away. Obviously, if something happens, something's necessary, I could pop up out of, you know, Turtle Mountain or the Duck Mountains or something like that, and we could do a broadcast. That's kind of the beauty of what we have going on here, boys, is that we can just we can do it from anywhere. So I'll just make sure I have my laptop and a good Wi-Fi connection. If I have to, a sat phone, that, you know, will allow me to broadcast from anywhere in our lovely province.
There you go. The kind of dedication you show to this show is second to none. Where is the Explore MB trip for tomorrow? Can you let the people know? We have people from all over the world joining us that are watching this show. Maybe you're going to pop by in their region with your usual Sunday sojourns throughout this great province of ours.
I think tomorrow probably will be the Interlake. So I'll be somewhere in the Interlake. I will give people, you know, since we're waiting for Michael, I will give people a little thing that they should go to Assiniboine Park and check out this new Canada Diversity Gardens. I checked it out last night because I saw on Twitter that it was open. So I was like, I was coming back from Birds Hill, and I was like, I'll pop over there. And honestly, it's awesome. They did a great job. It's not complete, but what they've been able to do, what I saw, I think it's really nice. I think it's going to be a nice attraction for people coming to Winnipeg, and it's really worth checking out. So I would suggest that quick segue from hockey, go check that out.
There you go. The indoor component of that will be open, I believe, late in 2022. But the outdoor gardens that are part of the Diversity Gardens, it's almost built into the name there, those are open and available for people to travel around.
Are the gardens pretty diverse, Dave?
They are diverse. They had a lot of different types of plants and flowers.
Some flora and fauna?
Most of which I couldn't identify.
But they were nice. That's the important part. They were nice.
More like chlorophyll.
Yeah.
Alrighty, let's while we're waiting for Michael Tracos, as I mentioned, let's talk about some of the names that are being bandied about on the trade block throughout the NHL. You know, Elliot Friedman came out with his final 33 thoughts, as Jimmy Toth mentioned, that came out earlier today, and the names are, they're not small names. This isn't one of those years where these are sort of bit players that you're hyping up to try and, you know, make things more interesting. There is some, you know, cream of the crop, some creme de la creme whose names are now out there. I mean, the big one from earlier this week coming out of St. Louis, which will be, of course, a division rival, back to being a division rival for the Winnipeg Jets this coming year, Vladimir Tarasenko. He says that his time is up in St. Louis. He's looking for a trade out of St. Louis. He's got 2 years left on his contract, a salary cap hit of $7.5 million per season for a guy who's come off some serious shoulder injuries that have plagued them really for the last number of years, that he actually attributes to being misdiagnosed and mishandled by the medical staff of the St. Louis Blues. How interested would you be in getting Tarasenko? It's definitely a risk. The salary is big, but if he's healthy, if being the operative word there, are you still getting one of the formerly premier goal scorers in the NHL?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. That was a bombshell, you know, coming from our good friend Jeremy Rutherford. That was an excellent article, great reporting by him. And you know, you mentioned $7.5 million is the cap hit, Drew, but he actually makes $9.5 million real money. So the cap hit matters. Like a team, I think the reason why that, you know, really matters here is because what we were talking about with Jim Toth, right? Like the flat cap. So not a lot of teams like can afford that, first of all. But yeah, Tarasenko is a guy, he might not be, you know, a 40 goal scorer anymore, but I think most people would still put him around, you know, a 30 goal scorer. And, you know, there aren't a lot of 30 goal scorers in the NHL. Tarasenko is a really interesting one. Like you've heard, you know, certain teams that might be interested in him. Like I read the Islanders might be a team, right? Because we know that, you know, they could have definitely used a little bit more scoring, even though they took the Tampa Bay Lightning to 7 games. So, you know, Tarasenko has been linked to them. And then you just have to kind of go up and down the list on cap friendly and kind of figure out which teams, you know, could really afford him, right? Like the one that I read about that to me just doesn't make a lot of sense is, you know, going to Calgary for Matthew Tkachuk. Like, first off, you're not going to get Matthew Tkachuk for just straight up Tarasenko. You'd have to throw in prospects, draft picks. I just don't think Calgary, first off, we don't know if, you know, Tarasenko would accept that trade, because I do believe he has a no move clause. So the connection with, you know, St. Louis is obvious, right? Keith Tkachuk's history with the organization. I think he might actually work for them, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Do some scouting for them.
Ambassador or something. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was one of the rumors, but there's no doubt that Tarasenko drew, you know, further to your point, when you consider that, you know, Jack Eichel's name is out there. Seth Jones' name is out there. You know, Duncan Keith's name is out there. You know, we mentioned the Flames, Johnny Gaudreau's name is out there. So these are like, you know, big time names, you know, guys between the age of like, you know, 25 and 30 that could still, you know, fill a, you know, top six role on forward or a top four, you know, D role. So Tarasenko is a really interesting one to me. I just don't know like what a team would want to give up for him. Cause like you said, like he's still, you know, relatively young. Like what is he, 29, 30 years old? but like how much of a toll have these injuries taken? Like, to me, like, he's definitely not the same goal scorer that he was, you know, 3 years ago when St. Louis won the cup.
Yeah, he's 29. He'll be 30 in December. I mean, it's a really interesting one, because if he gets his shoulder healthy, then you could say you're acquiring a guy, you know, who was a terrific goal scorer, who actually doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on his body over the past couple of years, because he really hasn't played because he's been trying to rehab that shoulder, you know. But the flip side to that is, you know, if you're acquiring him for $7.5 million of a cap hit or $9.5 million of actual salary, and he is still injured, well, that's, you know, good money wasted almost. You know, if you're the St. Louis Blues, I think you can't really expect to get any sort of return for Tarasenko, you know, unless they're willing to eat a whole bunch of that salary. That's the only way. Otherwise, it's almost like a bit of a salary dump, just given his injury history. I don't know which NHL team, Dave, is going to really be eager to pay a guy with a lot of injuries and a significant injury history and shoulders. I mean, if you're an NHL player and your shoulder's bum, you know, you can't shoot. You know, that's especially a big part of the game.
Well, especially for Tarasenko. I mean, that is his game. His shot is lethal, and I think that'll be a huge element, of course. And, you know, it's just a very unusual story. And, you know, as everybody knows, we generally pay attention to what's going on with the Jets. So, but more and more, and it's funny because I'm finding that I'm doing it more in the papers now, I'm adding NHL links, and I think it's important to see what's going on. You know, it's been easier when you're just following the other Canadian teams, but now you got to follow more of what's going on in the West, the central teams. So you're looking at what Minnesota is doing, what St. Louis is doing. And again, to me, this is a very unusual situation. I mean, I think it probably goes back to Tarasenko not being given the captain's role when that became available in St. Louis. I think that probably rubbed him the wrong way. I think I read an article yesterday. I think it was maybe our friend Andy Strickland, who covers the St. Louis Blues, for Fox Sports. I think he said something along the lines of, it seems like there's maybe just a personality clash with other guys in that Blues room. So I, you know, it's weird to think that, you know, just 2 years ago, those guys were winning Stanley Cups together, and now they're now he's looking for a change in scenery. So I don't envision Tarasenko, based on what is already out there, staying with St. Louis. But yeah, I think if you're a team, you're taking a big risk for it with a guy who has been, you know, there's always guys like that, right? We remember Marian Gaborik, who's, you know, so talented, but had those injuries. And was he going to ever be able to get back to the level that you knew he was capable of based on his injury history? And he just never seemed to be able to get back there. So to me, I think a Tarasenko, especially to the guys, the point, that cap hit is insane, right? Like, that's a big number. And unless you're a team that can absorb it, which not many are, especially if you're like, we always have to think, you're like, you know, at this point, how you look around and you think to yourself, how many teams can do this? Well, most of the teams that would want to acquire a Tarasenko to add secondary scoring are probably going to be up against the cap anyway. So are you going to move cap out in order to secure a player who's not happy with his current existence? Obviously that could change if he gets into a new one, but I think it's interesting. I actually, the idea, Drew, and we're talking about this segment, I think what's so fascinating is all of these guys, it's becoming almost a little NBA, and I'm not saying that derogatorily. I'm just saying like that. I just think it's interesting how guys are not, like a Seth Jones is saying, I don't want to sign here, you know, Line A. Line A never said it outwardly, but his agent did, essentially. And it's just, it's interesting to hear younger, Drew's?
That's okay. So what's happening above me is it appears as though my daughter's throwing a bit of a temper tantrum. And so she's stomping on the floor, which just made my curling broom fall in the basement next to me. So as you can see, things are going smoothly in the household this morning.
Yeah, the Mindell household is running very efficiently.
Like,
yeah.
Drew, if you have to leave the show for a couple of minutes just to, you know, handle some parenting duties, we can handle it. We'll take it from here.
It could just be me and as if you want. But anyway, the point is, I just think it's just, I think it's fascinating. I think it's a fascinating year. Like Eichel, look, there's another guy who, I mean, he hasn't outwardly said, I don't want to be in Buffalo, but I mean, it can't be any more clear. Well, he's done in Buffalo. So it's just, I think the league is different. It's just a different year, a different time. It's not, maybe something folks aren't used to, that players are asking to change scenery. You know, we romanticize this idea, and for good reasons, that players will stay with the team they're drafted by, and they'll be there long term, and they'll win cups. That's kind of that notion. But again, I think we're seeing guys want to pick their spots earlier than they generally could have been because they were UFAs.
I think it has a lot to do, guys. I was just going to say, Drew, that like I think, like, you know, you look at like what is the common denominator here with like players wanting to leave in the last year of a contract, I think is that obviously the negotiations probably aren't going very well, right, Dave? Like I mentioned that, you know, prior to Patrick Laine being traded, and everyone was kind of focused on, you know, well, he just wants to get out because of the way he's being used. But I threw that out there, like Laine is looking for big money on his next contract. Like he didn't help himself with the way he played this year, but like you have to think Laine is going to want what, $8 or $9 million a year. Again, I'm not saying he's going to get that, but maybe the Jets, the negotiations were going so poorly that, you know, that was part of the reason why he wanted out there. I would have to think like Seth Jones is a similar situation, right? Like all of these situations are different. I agree with Dave. Like I think, you know, Tarasenko definitely wanted to be the captain, and it appears that the way that these, you know, shoulder surgeries were handled, obviously Tarasenko and his agent had some issues with that. So that's, you know, complicating matters. But like with Seth Jones, I think the big thing is what we talked about, like Zach Werenski, you know, is a guy who needs a new contract, right? So like Zach Werenski is going to make what, $8 or $9 million a year. Like Werenski's got 1 year left at five. Jones has got 1 year left at 5.4. We know Werenski's going to make a lot more, not less. So, you know, even if it's $8 million a year, maybe Columbus didn't want to give, you know, Seth Jones $8 million a year. And that's $16 million of $81 million. So I think that's a factor here, but I'm a little higher on Seth Jones than some people. I agree. The analytics, you know, the analytics don't lie. Like his analytics were awful last year. You know, Drew was whipping out like WAR and expected goals, not WAR. What is it good for? But you know, Seth Jones, Chicago makes a lot of sense, guys. Like I said that, if you do the, you know, connect the dots, if they're going to move out Duncan Keith, I mean, it's time to move on from, you know, Keith and Seabrook. So Seth Jones on Chicago makes a lot of sense.
Well, I'll tell you what doesn't make sense is Duncan Keith at that salary on you know, a team trading for him. And the Oilers apparently are all hot and heavy with trying to get Duncan Keith. And look, I understand that the name Duncan Keith holds a lot more value right now than the player Duncan Keith. But if the Oilers are going to acquire him, and that's what, you know, again, you know, they're grinding it out. If they're going to acquire Duncan Keith at that salary, they can't do so while also giving up a player, which is the talk that, you know, that the Blackhawks are asking for a guy like Caleb Jones out of Edmonton. Now, Caleb Jones is not, you know, not a fantastic hockey player, but if you're the Oilers and you're taking on that salary, you're basically doing that as a salary dump more than anything. I mean, I can't understand the idea of paying, you know, big money, you know, salary wise, and giving up players to acquire Duncan Keith at this point of his career.
I think the numbers would probably indicate, like on a good team, Duncan Keith is a third pairing defenseman, and people think that's crazy because, you know, Keith is arguably a Hall of Famer. Like, there's a good chance he's had an unbelievable career, like not just the Stanley Cups, but you know what he's done with Team Canada and everything. So like, Keith is a really good player, but like, I mean, Captain Obvious doesn't need to come on our show right now and tell us that, you know, Duncan Keith isn't the same player that he was, you know, back in 2015 when Chicago won their third Stanley Cup, right? It's just the case. So I agree with you, Drew.
Knows that, though. The way they're talking about it, I'm not sure they fully know that.
I mean, Dougie Hamilton to me makes a lot more sense on Edmonton. Like, this is a guy who's in his prime right now, right? Like, and you know, like, how much are you going to have to pay Dougie Hamilton? Probably $8 or $9 million a year. He's a top 20 defenseman, maybe even top 10 offensive defenseman in the NHL. So, you know, Duncan Keith is a weird one, like, because Seth Jones, he's in his prime. Vladimir Tarasenko, maybe a little bit out of his prime. Jack Eichel, he's in his prime. Duncan Keith, again, all due respect, like, I'm not saying, like, I think Keith can play another 2 or 3 years in the league, boys. Like, he's a guy that could probably play in the league when he's 40 years old, but he's just not the Duncan Keith. He's not the Conn Smythe Duncan Keith that we remember from back in 2013.
If he's playing on your third pair and he's playing, you know, and his salary being whatever his salary is.
And the Hawks have eaten a big portion of that.
And if they eat a big portion of that, that's right. Then you're fine with Duncan Keith. But I mean, it sounds like Edmonton expects him to step in, that they're getting Duncan Keith in his prime that he was when the Blackhawks were going on long playoff runs and those epic games and those epic battles in the Western Conference Finals with the Los Angeles Kings. I mean, that's not Duncan Keith at this point in his career. You're getting a guy who's certainly on the downside of his career, certainly, you know, just winding down his career. But the Oilers just seem to be, I think they're in love with the idea of Duncan Keith more than really the player Duncan Keith.
Well, and you've got Darnell Nurse there, Dave, right? Like, he's your top pair left shot defenseman. So I don't think, Ken Holland or Dave Tippett expect him to be a top pairing defenseman. The issue is, though, like, do you expect him to be your third or fourth best defenseman? And I think that's going to be tough at 30. It's almost like, I would also throw in similar to Zdeno Chara on Boston. Right. Like, I think one of the reasons why that didn't work out and the reason why, Chara moved on to the Capitals is because Chara was like, no, I can still, do this. I can provide this amount of minutes. I can provide this type of role. And Boston was saying at this point in your career, you're a 5-6 defenseman, which again, Chara is another guy, probably a future Hall of Famer, but you have to just be realistic. So I think it's a similar situation there. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. With Duncan Keith, does he go to Edmonton? Is it another team? Does he stay in Chicago? Because I think, guys, if the last few years have taught us anything with the salary cap, the pandemic, just what's happened with the NHL in terms of their, business operations, it's like salaries matter more than ever. They always mattered a lot, but you definitely don't want to tie too much of your salary cap up in a player who's not really contributing, for your team on a nightly basis.
Go ahead. No, the only thing I want to just jump in, I was going to say, I don't know where you were going to go, but the thing, someone just mentioned Vegas in the chat, and I was thinking to myself, it's amazing to think that Eichel is now being mentioned with Vegas. We've heard Eichel mentioned with the Rangers. We've heard Eichel mentioned with the Kings. And I'm thinking to myself, how is Vegas bringing in a $10 million player? It's funny because I suspect Kelly, if anybody could do it, maybe it's Kelly McCrimmon, but I love the fact that somehow Vegas has gotten themselves into the discussion about Jack Eichel. I think it's hilarious.
Well, I mean, I guess they would. Salary cap, I just don't know how it would work. I mean,
that's what I'm talking about.
They have the younger prospects. They do have some prospects that might interest Buffalo. But the money is. I mean, unless their salary cap is $120 million, it just doesn't seem to work. Something has to give at some point in time with Vegas with regard to the salary cap. I mean, last year, you heard Jim talk about it earlier. They were dressing. They weren't dressing a full rosters for some games simply because of that reason, because of the salary cap. What about Nate Schmidt? Speaking about Vegas, this is a guy that they traded to Vancouver in order to acquire really Alex Pietrangelo and fit him in their salary cap. We know that Nate Schmidt and Vancouver, that did not work out, and it sounds like Schmidt is going to be traded somewhere. This is a guy who still has another 4 years left on his contract at $5.95 million per season. Is this maybe a buy low candidate, or are you concerned that the salary cap hit is not commensurate with the production at this stage in his career? He wasn't very good with Vancouver last year, but is that a Nate Schmidt factor or is that a Canucks tire fire factor?
Yeah, and they couldn't find the right D partner for Schmidt in Vancouver for sure. But it's surprising, as you mentioned, Drew, because they acquire him. He's got 4 years left, and $5.9 million to me is not prohibitive. I don't think he's vastly overpaid. It kind of makes sense for a guy, a veteran NHLer, who was a very productive defenseman for the Golden Knights. Like those playoff runs, that the Golden Knights went on, Schmidt was a bona fide top four defenseman for them. And I think he is a bona fide top four defenseman on most teams. I guess, the question becomes is Schmidt a top pairing defenseman? Is he a second pairing defenseman? What type of player is most complimentary for him? I think there would be interest. He can move the puck. The guy can skate. He's got a physicality to his game. He's a pretty good defenseman. So that one's a little bit surprising for me. Duncan Keith isn't surprising because Chicago obviously, is moving on with Seabrook's money coming off. And just, the fact that they've been struggling and they've got too much money tied up in older aging players. Right. But Schmidt, it wasn't, the year that he wanted for sure in Vancouver, but I do think there would be interest. Again, would a team like the Jets be interested?
Well, that's the team. I mean, this is a left side defenseman who, now granted, he's got a modified no trade clause. So he's got 10 teams on his no trade clause. So that might be a factor. And according to Elliot Friedman and other reports, as John Chan mentions in the chat, it sounds like Nate Schmidt wants to go back to an American team as opposed to going back to staying in Canada. That being said, he is a Minnesota boy. He's from, I believe, St. Cloud. So maybe maybe Winnipeg and the Minnesota connections appeal to him.
And the Wild. I've read the Wild as well, just because we think that there's a good chance like a guy like Matt Dumba might be moved, right? So like if you do, again, it's all puzzle pieces, right? Like it, right. Like Schmidt to me is like a guy that you know exactly what you're going to get. That's the thing that's different, I think, than Duncan Keith. Like Duncan Keith, you don't know like how many minutes is he going to be able to play just based on his age. And again, I do think Keith has a lot left in the tank. Maybe less than he did, you know, a few years ago. But like with Nate Schmidt, like he's a guy you plug in your top four, you know, very dependable. Yeah, like does he make mistakes? He's not a perfect defenseman. I really like Schmidt's game. Like I think he could offer a lot. I think he would look good in a Jets uniform. I don't necessarily know that that's going to happen. But if the Canucks trade him, they're gonna get a good return for him for sure.
Well, I wonder about that. I wonder about the return given the down year that he's had, given the salary cap scenario, given, you know, sort of everything sort of non-hockey related. Will Canucks be able to really, you know, they got him for nothing. They got him for a third round pick because it was a salary dump by Vegas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's, you know, necessarily a salary dump by Vancouver, but the Canucks do need to free up some cap space. They have to sign Elias Pettersson. They have to sign Quinn Hughes. So yep. It's not like they're, you know, free and clear salary cap wise. You know, there's a lot about Nate Schmidt that interests me from a Winnipeg Jets perspective, but I wonder if the 4 years left on his contract make it so that he would almost be blocking too many players on the left side. That, you know, Ville Heinola, you know, maybe you acquire Nate Schmidt as insulation to help Ville Heinola, you know, for another year, so he doesn't have to necessarily play top 4 minutes. But then what does that do if the Jets hold on to Logan Stanley? What does that do, you know, with everything else? Now, if Logan Stanley gets selected by the Kraken in the expansion draft, well, maybe you have a hole on your left side now that acquiring Nate Schmidt could fix, and you go Morrissey, Schmidt, Heinola down your left side for next season. But obviously time will tell. We won't know about that for another, you know, 11 or so days. So you wonder if a Nate Schmidt move happens after the expansion draft when the dust has cleared a little bit and the Jets don't have to go out and bid for a free agent defenseman. Instead, they can acquire one who's got cost certainty for 4 years, who you know what you're going to have to pay him for 4 years. I could see a match, just not yet. Probably another 2 weeks or so away is when that match, I think, would become a little bit more evident if it actually makes sense.
Yeah, and I think, Drew, you're right. I think it's one of those situations where, as he used it, and I was talking about this last week, it's all about puzzle pieces, right? Like you're always looking at the board and you're saying, okay, well, if this player comes on, then that gives this guy an opportunity. And you're talking about blocking opportunity. I mean, that's you've got Josh Morrissey long-term. You'd have Nate Schmidt for, you know, a few more years, and then you'd have one spot available for Logan Stanley, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg. Now, mm-hmm. I'm all for letting Dylan Sandberg play in the AHL next year. I don't have a problem with that because I think it's good for his development. If he can, again, guys are always, I'm always happy to be proven wrong. And I don't doubt Dylan Sandberg because I watched him play this year. I know he's a very good defenseman and a very good defensive prospect, I should say. And I think, like I said, I saw what he did with Johnny Kovacevic, top pairing, a lot of nights for the Manitoba Moose. They look good together. But I just think to yourself, are you going to block their opportunity to give you that shot? Now, here's the reality. The reality is defensemen get injured. Things happen. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to have a top six that's going to remain healthy forever. But the concern is, are you going to limit their opportunity to do that? Now, again, to your point, that idea of insulation, if you have, let's say you keep your defense the way it is, and we would acknowledge, I think, that the Jets right now, their big concern is that right side defense, right? Not necessarily the left side, because not only would they have the guys there, but they do have the prospects. Like I said, Heinola, Stanley, Sandberg, and Chisholm. Chisholm's a really good skater. You know, had a bit of an injury, cost him. His season ended a little early for the Manitoba Moose, but excellent skater, excellent offensive ability. Could be real interesting at the NHL level. We'll see. But again, needs more time in the AHL. So that's not a guy you're necessarily relying on. But I'm just saying, like, you just also don't want to create a logjam. And if you do, maybe that gives you the luxury of trading guys. If you say, okay, we're comfortable with Morrissey, Schmidt, Heinola, let's say, or Morrissey, Schmidt, Sandberg, Stanley, then maybe you keep Heinola and you trade Sandberg, or you do something that frees them up and allows you to maybe to insulate your right side the way your left side is. Because, well, like I've long talked about, the only prospect right now in the Jets system to come up on that right side, really, I mean, you've got Gavanke, he's one, but really it's Johnny Kovacevic who kind of really took the bull by the horns last year for the Manitoba Moose and put himself into that position. But you don't have a lot of depth after right now, Dylan DeMello, Neil Pionk, question mark.
You know, I wanted to throw this in there, you know, to, you know, further to Dave's point, talking about, you know, the salary cap. I think you also have to think about it. Like, GMs get criticized a lot this time of year, you know, for making, you know, bad UFA signings. And there's a long list of bad UFA signings, right? But I also think you have to give them credit in terms of they don't want to give a player money, you know, to Dave's point, you know, that's going to tie up money for a future young player. Like, for example, right, like Miro Heiskanen is a guy that's been talked about as a potential offer sheet target, right? I don't think Dallas is you know, in danger of losing Miro Heiskanen. He's, you know, one of the best defensemen in the league. But like, so right off the bat, you have to just knock teams off. It's like Dallas is not going to be in on Seth Jones. Like, there's certain teams that, like, you could probably knock off 10 to 15 teams, but like, you guys know I'm a big Devils guy. Like, I think Seth Jones would look really good on the Devils just because they're weak on the left side and the right side. Like, I really think Ty Smith.
so you know, they're weak on defense is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, they are. I mean, like, let's be honest. Like, Mackenzie Blackwood had a great year in net. And, you know, I think there were, you know, some good players that took a, you know, step forward. Like, I think Jack Hughes had a good season. You know, obviously the you know, future's bright with Nico Hischier. And, like, if there's one team that can afford him and they could give up some prospects, it would be the Devils. But like, you can't, if you're a team like Colorado, and I know he's been linked to Colorado, like, I just don't see the fit there, because you've got Cale Makar, you've got Bowen Byram, you've got Sam Girard. So the question becomes, like, do you want to be paying Seth Jones $9 million a year, you know, when he's 31 years old? Because right now, like, what, Seth Jones is how old? 25 years old? Like, it's not, you're not going to regret that when he's 26, 27, 28. But when you're paying him $9 million a year, I would.
Assuming he doesn't play like he did last year.
Well, exactly. So I really like Seth Jones. I just think, like, the market for him is maybe not as big as some people think. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, you saw what Elliot Friedman reported earlier today, that Philadelphia, who was, you know, linked to him and everything else, is backing away because Seth Jones, which is totally his prerogative, and I'm glad to see players, you know, using their UFA status as a cudgel and as an opportunity more so than just giving it away for free. He's saying, I'm not prepared to make a long-term commitment. I don't know anything about the Philadelphia Flyers organization as of yet. Sure, you can trade for me, and sure, maybe you can woo me and win me over, but I'm not going to, I'm not going to sign an 8-year deal tomorrow when I haven't yet been there. There's just no reason for him to do that. There's no reason for most players from doing that. So that's why it makes sense. You know, I'm a year away from UFA status. If Columbus wants to trade me, terrific. They can trade me, but I'm going to wait and I'm going to take my time, and I might not necessarily make it to free agency if it turns out that Philadelphia or Chicago or Colorado or whomever is a desirable location for me, but I'm not prepared to give away that freedom, give away that opportunity just yet, because there's no reason to do so. You have leverage. Use your leverage. And finally, we're seeing players use their leverage more than they have previously in recent NHL history.
Last thought to you, Dave. Well, I was going to say, the only counterpoint I would offer to that, Drew, though, is that you do hamstring your team a little bit. You do, because teams now know there's blood in the water. When it becomes a public thing.
That's a problem.
Well, it is, though, because...
What is it, Jaws?
What's that?
What is this, Jaws?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you're right. It's
or Sharknado, Dave.
It's not his problem, but yeah, exactly it is. But the point is, you know, you also don't need to necessarily hamstring the team. I mean, you can make that public, I guess, if you're not making headway and you don't feel that you're being heard, then I can understand that. That's all I'm saying. I just think, and maybe that's the situation here. I have no idea. So I'm not commenting on the specifics of Seth Jones' situation. I mean, Ezzy and I, you know, we watched him at the draft. We thought he's a terrific young player. And, you know, I'm not sure anybody should be judged based on
1 year.
What happened in Columbus. No, and especially what happened in Columbus this year. Sure. It just seemed like, you know, a tire fire from start to finish. So I just think it's one of those situations where you got to be a little careful. You got to tread lightly because, you know, you want to be able to let the team that you're trying to leave maximize value for you. And it makes it easier. And you're right. It's not the player's responsibility, but it also, I mean, these are your brothers. These are your friends that are still, that you're leaving behind. Even if you don't love the organization, you don't necessarily want to screw them by saying, okay, well, you know, your team is now have to accept a lesser offer as a result of the situation I've put them into. And more importantly, if the team doesn't trade you, the team decides to hang on to you, it's made it an awkward situation. So I just say, like, that's why when what Mike Leem did to Patrick Laine, for example, I thought it was inexcusable personally. I didn't think it was a good move because it made Laine front and center. It didn't make it. And again, agents are not generally stupid with what they do. You know, perhaps, I mean, look what Dan Milstein did. He got Kucherov a deal with Bud Light as a result of the, of his comments. But I just think, like, you know,
I've been trying to get that type of deal for 8 years now, Dave.
Oh, we're aware. We're not.
You've been trying to get that type of deal for like 25 years. Who are you kidding with about 8 years? Come on there.
So I just think,
like, Bud Light's kind of like drinking water, but
I just think
their money counts just the same.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's one of those situations where you have to be cognizant of the position you're putting the player and the team in and all that sort of thing.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll give some final thoughts, give our final thoughts on the 2021 season.
Smash the like button, people.
Smash the
like button. I'm not sure what happened with Trake, guys. We thought we were going to have Michael Trakos on. Hopefully,
hashtag big time. Okay.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get in touch with our good buddy Michael Trakos, and hopefully if he was biking, he was wearing a helmet. Anyways, we'll come back with that. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, we're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you each and every Saturday, all throughout the month of July. Of course, we'll take August off, but as I mentioned previously, and it's available on IllegalCurve.com for you to keep track, a whole bunch of special broadcasts upcoming here for the Illegal Curve Hockey crew. Gentlemen, your final thoughts, I suppose, on what was a shortened and unique and one-of-a-kind 2021 NHL season. The Tampa Bay Lightning, for the second consecutive year, raised Lord Stanley's Cup. It's amazing they do it 2 years in a row, having played not a full season in either of the 2 years, but I suppose we can just say thanks, COVID, for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. And yeah, like, you know, was there some, you know, salary cap manipulation? Like, was Nikita Kucherov, you know, ready to come back in, you know, early March or early April? Yeah, he probably was. But I mean, this was just like kind of like an unstoppable, you know, force, right? Like, I just thought, you know, heading into that Stanley Cup final, even though, you know, Dave and I were predicting that, you know, Montreal would win, I should have known better and just, you know, done the George Costanza opposite and you know, selected the Lightning. Maybe the Canadians would have had a chance. But like, guys, how one-sided was the Stanley Cup final? Like, you got to give the Canadians so much credit for, you know, scratching and clawing and staying in the fight, as Paul Maurice used to say. Like, you know, they pushed it to five games. You know, it could have easily been a sweep. But, you know, down until the last, you know, few minutes, like, they were fighting. So give them a lot of credit, you know, for just getting to the Stanley Cup final. And obviously, you know, guys like Shea Weber and Carey Price, Corey Perry, like, especially the veterans, Brendan Gallagher, they wanted the cup. Like, they weren't happy with just getting there. But, you know, that is an accomplishment because, let's be honest, like, aside from me, who correctly predicted Montreal would get to the Stanley Cup final, not many people were predicting Montreal to get to the Stanley Cup final. Hey, Drew, a broken clock is right twice a day, right? So, I mean, I think it goes something like that. Fool me once, shame on you.
You got the quote right. You're very, very but, well done there.
Yeah, and you know, aside from, you know, you're asking about the 2021 season, Drew. Like, aside from the Lightning, I mean, it was a fun season. And yeah, did we get sick of, you know, watching the same six Canadian teams over and over again? Yes. Like, I'm pretty sure that, you know, after, you know, four or five games against the Oilers, like, we'd seen enough of the Oilers in the regular season, especially considering they beat the Jets 7 of 9 times, right? And Connor McDavid and Dreisaitl were just lighting up the Jets. So, you know, yeah, did we see too many of the same teams? And did it feel like we were living in a vacuum, only seeing teams in Canada? Absolutely. And was it weird that there were no fans for the majority of the season? Yes, it was weird. But I think it's just incredible that, you know, the season happened, considering that there were so many teams that, you know, had those lengthy COVID breaks. Like, we talked about the Canucks, you know, like, it was kind of uncertain if they would even, you know, play out the regular season. So I think there was a lot of exciting, you know, things that happened and a lot of great individual performances. Obviously, Connor McDavid at the top of that list, you know, putting up 100-plus points. And I think from the Jets' perspective, it was a very up-and-down year. Like, I still think it was a disappointing year. Is it great that they swept the Oilers in the first round and got to the second round? Yeah, absolutely. But when you look at, like, the opportunity that the Jets had, you know, to go deep in a year in which, let's be honest, like, that North Division was not stacked. And as soon as you had the Toronto Maple Leafs out of there, I think there was a good opportunity for the Jets to go to the conference final. Yeah, it was an opportunity wasted. But I think, you know, you have to look at the positives, right, guys? Like, you have to look at, you know, Logan Stanley and how great of a year he had in his first year in the NHL. You have to look at Cole Perfetti, had a great year with the Moose, great year at the World Juniors, wins a gold with Team Canada at the World Hockey Championships. Like, I think you have to focus, you know, on the positives. Mason Appleton had a career year. Like Andrew Kopp had a really good year, obviously in a contract year. Nikolai Ehlers was, you know, probably the Jets' best offensive forward. So there's a lot of things to like. Connor Hellebuck, I'm going to pretend that he was a finalist for the Vezina Trophy because he absolutely should have been a finalist for the Vezina Trophy. He had another great year and just gave us, you know, so many nights where, you know, he made all those highlight reel saves. So yeah, it was a disappointing year for the Jets, but it wasn't all bad.
Dave?
Well, I'm first of all, I'll start with the Stanley Cup final. If nobody watches the Stanley Cup final,
does it happen?
Does it actually happen? I mean, I think I watched in total about 5 minutes. I think I watched the end of game four in overtime, and I watched the last minute. I didn't watch the trophy presentation. I mean, I think if anything, like, look, as he's just outlined a lot of positive things that happened in 2021, and the fact that there was a season, and the fact that, you know, we're seeing fans slowly get back into the games, like, is wonderful, and I'm not going to malign that. But I just hope that this is the last year in our lifetime that we'll ever have to watch hockey in July, because it just doesn't go well. I mean, it's hard for people to focus unless, like it was funny because I was talking about the numbers and Sportsnet, I think, was raving this. Well, of course, this is the Canadian team in the finals. You're going to get a decent number. But look at the numbers in the States. They were atrocious. The NHL.
Second lowest in the last 25 years or something. I think
the numbers. Yeah. I mean, nobody was watching it. Nobody was paying attention. So yeah,
like who in like big states like California and New York and like Texas, like how many people in those states are watching, you know, the Canadians versus the Lightning?
No. The NHL will never learn. I mean, the truth of the matter is they will never learn. They don't. I mean, look, they don't care that much about ratings because they already have their money. The ratings year don't matter because the contracts are signed.
No, I know. And you know, the reality is that this would have been a year of all years to play like 40 something games. You know, I mean, it's funny, right? How many times do we have to hear the regular season doesn't matter? Well, the regular season doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Then why are you playing so many games? Well, we know it's because of gate revenue. We know that that's ultimately what drives it because, you know, teams don't need to play 82 games. But at the same time, they could have played fewer games. They could have ended this in June at least, tried to have a normal offseason. And again, as he talked about at the start of the show, they're already scheduling the preseason games for the end of September now for Seattle and for various teams. I mean, they have it all scheduled, but the point is it's happening. So there's not going to be a long off season like we're used to. We don't know if the Jets are going to do a rookie camp. I said a rookie camp. After they do the draft, traditionally they bring the rookies in and they do that.
They haven't done Penticton for a while. Like, when was the last Young Stars tournament? At least that was like three years ago.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, it's wonderful that everything happened. It was wonderful that we were able to continue rolling with the show. You know, the being able to be at the building and sitting and watching hockey games with no fans in it is probably one of the most weird experiences of my life, from, you know, 15,000 folks to zero. And, you know, but like I said, hopefully everything going well and Manitoba keep doing well when it comes to, you know, our recovery. I think we'll be back, hopefully back to normal, and we won't have to ever experience anything like this again. And that's all.
And I would expect, actually, this week, so you're talking about exhibition games, I would expect that the Jets would release their exhibition schedule probably this week, because after that, then it's straight, you know, expansion draft, NHL draft, free agency. August is the shutdown. So usually it is. And the NHL season, I bet you, the season schedule will be released sometime pretty soon.
Yeah. The NHL usually does it around the NHL draft. Like, I remember when we used to go to the draft. It almost always comes out, like, in a regular year, it would be around, like, let's say June 19th, June 20th. It's just a month later. So I would expect it to be the week after next week.
And the only asterisk, of course, that being what happens with the Olympics. And that's the big question mark that the NHL and the NHLPA and the IIHF and the IOC and all the rest of the alphabet soup are trying to figure out right now. Big thank you to everybody who joined us on this morning's program. It was very nice to see so many familiar faces and so many new faces in the
chat. I thought Michael Trakos, you know, provided some great insight. That was like, you know, we've had Trake on the show so many times over the years, but that was his best appearance. Thanks, yeah, Mike.
We'll try and figure out what happened with our buddy Michael. Jim Toth joined us in the first hour. It was great to have Jim on the program. Nice to see him, of course. And you know, we as I mentioned, thank everybody for joining us. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to our channel. You'll get alerted each and every time we go live here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. IllegalCurve.com is our website. It's updated all day long throughout the day. And as news breaks, Dave Minuk does the heavy lifting as it.
Oh, Neil Pionker signed, Dave.
Ezzy, don't do that. A big thank you to all of our sponsors: Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and the good people at Seagram. Support these fine businesses because they support the Legal Curve Hockey. They make this show a reality. For Dave Minuk in the top right, for Ezra Ginsberg in the bottom middle, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.